As the clock strikes 13, it is the 13th of April, year of our Lord 2021. It is day 395 of America Held Hostage. Today, coming up in the third hour, we're going to have a very interesting interview with GoTree, works in cybersecurity. We're going to talk about deep.web. Have you heard of that? We're also going to talk about Cyber Polygon as Davos is moving to create a cyber pandemic. And, of course, later in the show, we will also talk about, I guess they're going to call us coincidence theorists now, because we are looking at the connection between these vaccine reactions. We'll be right back. Well, I guess we can begin by talking about some personal news, although this isn't something that simply affects me personally anymore. We were there at the very beginning when they started rolling out censorship by association. I had first time I had my YouTube channel canceled. I had two channels, actually. I'd had one that had been inactive for several years, but it had 30,000 subscribers. They wanted me to start all over again with the other show, so we did. Got up to about 60,000 subscribers in about 7-8 months. And then everything was taken away, and of course that included videos that had several million views each. And that was and work that I had done for years. So that was kind of jarring to see all that flushed down the memory hole. But now it's happened again, as expected. This is my 7th rodeo with YouTube censorship. They deleted my channel yesterday. Not that I care. Nothing significant can be discussed on YouTube anymore. Now it's not about who you are. It's about what you're saying, really, more than anything else. As we saw, the same thing applied with DeSantis. I reported that yesterday. That wasn't what they shut me down for. But YouTube censored Governor DeSantis because he talked about how unnecessary it was to put masks on children, how counterproductive it was. You know, it damages them psychologically, it damages them physiologically. Perhaps that's the intention. And as we'll be talking later in the show, in the third hour, we'll be talking about the agenda of Davos. They're upfront about what they want to accomplish now in this next step. First, they lock us down in physical space, then they lock us down in cyberspace. That's what's coming. There's basically, you can break down what they've been talking about doing into three categories. It's just an extension of what they've been doing and an extension of what they've been planning for decades. They want to make sure that they have complete control over the infrastructure, complete control over you. So it boils down to essentially three things. Number one, everybody's got to have an ID so they can track and monitor and shut you down, just like in China, the social credit system. So everybody gets an ID, global ID. Second thing is to make sure that they shut down any speech that they don't like. That was their big thing. They said the existential threat to us is this pandemic of misinformation. In other words, anybody that questions what the authorities are putting out there. And of course, they use the same message to take down my channel that they did for the DeSantis video. Claims about COVID-19 vaccines that conflict with what the expert consensus is and the authorities. That is not allowed. You're not allowed to have claims. We have claims. They have expert pronouncements from on high. This is not science, as I said yesterday. Science is antithetical to arguments from authority. It is antithetical to consensus. Consensus is usually an indication that you don't understand something. If everybody agrees, then that means that you don't understand the science involved. Science is based on observation. It's based on skepticism. It's based on challenge. It's based on data, real data, not numbers that they got out. No. We want to see the data here, right? I want to test your assumptions. That's not allowed. And so it doesn't surprise me. I guess it did surprise me initially that the video they took down was the one that I talked about as I went into overtime yesterday. I went a little bit long because I was not ready to let go of the subject just as the show was ending, like 3 hours. I was talking about how the conservative Southern Baptists, and they're one of the most conservative out there, essentially, they are very conservative in saying that they are going to go with what the Bible has to say, and yet they've brought in this guy, Russell Moore, a Democrat operative, a former Democrat political candidate, who they put in charge of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Board. And I thought, oh, first time I'd seen this guy was when he was cheering vaccines, talking about how we should thank God for vaccines. They're a blessing from God. It's like, no, our immune system is a blessing from God. Our DNA, our natural DNA, is a blessing from God. I don't want to mess with that. We also have other blessings from God that he didn't thank God for. As a matter of fact, they tried to purge those, and that is therapeutics. We had a lot of therapeutics that would have short-circuited this thing from the very beginning. But of course, this was a conspiracy to vaccinate and to identify people. I think that's probably the best. They say that COVID is a it stands for Corona, C-O, and V-I for virus, and D for disease. I say it stands for conspiracy, C-O, to V, vaccinate, and to identify everybody. I think that is far more descriptive of what's going on here and of the agenda. So anyway, as I was talking about that, I thought it was really, really surprising that he would be saying that. But I've talked about how other people in the conservative Baptist, Southern Baptists like Franklin Graham, people like Al Mohler have been doing that as well. But when I looked this guy up, I thought, oh, religious liberty? What has he said about religious liberty being taken away in the last year? Well, absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. Said nothing about the pastor. It was jailed. The church that was wrapped in three layers of chain link fence in Canada. Nothing. Not about religious liberty. It's about a political agenda. It'd been very divisive in the conference a couple of years ago, because he was a rabid never-Trumper, bringing into the situation politics that didn't need to be brought into the situation. But then failing to do anything about religious liberty. And when you talk about the ethics, he's not just praising the vaccine. He is writing op-ed pieces telling people why they don't need to be concerned about cannibal medicine. We shouldn't be concerned about an industry that profits by the tens of billions as contract killers, by an industry that operates with the same ethics as Joseph Mengele, with a Southern Baptist organization, the ERLB, that sells you that as acceptable. The end justifies the means. Don't worry, these people are dead already, so let's just use them. Right? Let's just use them. So hopefully, Southern Baptists will not turn into the Donner Party, except the Donner Party didn't kill their victims. The FDA has contracts out for babies at certain ages, certain organs that they want from these babies, and they specify fresh, not frozen. This is how I want you to kill the child so that you don't destroy the organs that I want, fresh, not frozen. That's the conspiracy between our government and these Mengele medical experts. That is the conspiracy between YouTube to cover this up. Because, you know, when I talk about the ethics of Russell Moore and his lack of ethics, I also, by extension, talk about the lack of ethics of their pharmaceutical partners. So you will not see my content on YouTube, because there really wasn't any point of being there. Anything that is significant to be discussed, you can't put it. I could talk about economics for the time being. For the time being. You can't talk about voting fraud. You can't talk about the core issues, which is to question the narrative that they're putting out. I have a lot to say about what they're doing to us. But, of course, I fully expect, since we see that this rash of this massive adverse effects, deaths and injuries that we've seen. As I pointed out yesterday, there's several different ways to look at it. You could compare it to the previous year, in which case we have a 6,000% increase, which is 60 times what we had reported to the system the previous year for these 3 months. Or you could look at it with the data that we had, not this last report, which went to the first week of April, but the one prior to that, we had as many people who had reported adverse effects and deaths into the system. In less than 3 months, we had as many people that had as reported in there in less than 3 months than we did in 10 years combined prior. And then with the additional week, as I reported yesterday, with one more week added, it added 11 years. So it is happening at more than 44 times the rate that we've had over the last decade. And that included the injuries from H1N1, the pandemic vaccines that were part of the swine flu partnership between Fauci and Sawi a decade ago. So it includes that. And it's accelerating because, again, we did not have a full 3 months of data, and just 1 week added the equivalent of 1 year in terms of deaths and adverse effects. But that's just a coincidence. That had nothing to do with any of this, right? These people just happened to die at that particular time. Yet we're not seeing the same kind of pattern that we saw with COVID. With COVID, we saw people that, as I've said many times, it looks like a relabeling of the actuarial table. People with an average age of 79 to 80 years old, multiple comorbidities, people who were not expected to live. And when they died, it was assumed that they died from COVID because they did not do autopsies. There was nothing unusual about it. We went to zero flu deaths, and pneumonia became not a big deal. All of that was labeled COVID. But now, if you get vaccinated and you immediately have adverse effects or die, that's a coincidence. And so I guess we're not going to be conspiracy theorists anymore. We're going to be coincidence theorists. Or maybe they're the coincidence theorists. Is that it? Everything to them is a coincidence. Before we get into this and before we get into our interview, and I want to talk about what happened with Dante Wright, guns and policing. We're going to talk about, again, in the third hour when Goat Tree comes on, we're going to talk about a lot of things. Deep Dot Web, Cyber Polygon, DARPA's implants, because that's a key part of what they're talking about. And an interesting thing about that, in my opinion, is that if you recall a few weeks ago when I was talking to Rabbi Smith, he said, focus on the tests. The tests are everything. With the tests, they can take you away and lock you up, and you're not even sick. Well, you don't know that you're sick, but my test has anticipated that you're going to be sick. It takes pre-crime to an all-new level. This is pre-sickness quarantine. And that's exactly what DARPA wants to do. Pre-sickness quarantine. Now, this is to protect the military, of course. But let me tell you, these DARPA programs are never limited to the military. But there's another aspect of that that I find frightening as well. And that is that the people who will submit to an under-the-skin implant to constantly monitor and test them and red flag them, people who will work for a military that degrades them like that, that turns them into lab rats, these people will have no qualms whatsoever about coming after you. These are people who do not value their own freedom and dignity. They will not value your freedom and dignity either. And understand, this is what they're looking for. They're not looking for a few good men. Not anymore. They're looking for minions. A few bad minions. So we're going to get into all of that coming up later in the show. I want to begin with some headline news here. You know, in Vegas, they have just banned grass. No, not that kind of grass. That's perfectly legal for recreational use even. No. Lawn grass. That's right. Sin City, where the only sin is to have a lawn. This is how crazy we are right now. They want to limit water use by banning grass that nobody walks on. So I guess if you have grass in Las Vegas, you'll need to put a sign up instead of keep off the grass. You'll have to say keep on the grass so that I can keep the grass. This may be a coup de grace to actually temperature control there in the area. But of course, you know, marijuana is legal, that kind of grass. They want people to get rid of their grass and to plant cactus, which you, of course, will not be walking on. The scale, they said, is pretty unprecedented. We've never had anybody do a full ban on what they call non-functional turf. But is it non-functional? In Phoenix, they said, well, we're not really interested in doing that. We have a hot, dry area, and we understand that trees and grass are blunting urban heat islands. Urban heat islands. And this is a very important thing that I'd focused on many years when I worked with people who were opposing the climate change dictators. The sky is falling alarmists, the brain trusts for the Green New Dealers. When you look at the changes in temperature that they said they'd monitored, there really hadn't been any change in temperature. And even though they're collecting the temperature by moving the thermometers to heat islands, they still couldn't show an effective correlation between an increase in CO2, which they can measure, which has happened. But that did not increase temperature, much to their consternation and their conspiring together. That was what ClimateGate was all about. East Anglia University and the University of Virginia, Michael Mann. They started conspiring. They said, "Whoa, wait, CO2 is going up, but we're not seeing that hockey stick exponential rise in temperature that we'd predicted. What are we going to do? We got to hide this. We got to figure out a way to explain this away." And so they were conspiring to do that. I was with a group that said, "All right, show us your original data. We want to audit what you've done." "I'm not showing you that. That's intellectual property." "No, no, no. You did this while you were on the government payroll there at the University of Virginia. You did it at work on government computers. You put together your papers and you published them, so don't talk to us about intellectual property rights." And not only that, not only did you do this on the government dime as a government employee, but your prognostications were used to create public policy. So we want to see the data. Sued them and lost. The government, the judges, the judiciary said, "No, it's his private papers." Not his private papers at all. Nevertheless, when we talked about this, we said, look at what they're doing. They've moved the temperature collection, in many cases, to some of the worst heat islands, airport runways, where it's no shade, and you're just out there on the tarmac, and many other cases. When I lived in Raleigh, we lived in just an area that was about 20 minutes outside of Raleigh, heavily forested, when it was consistent throughout the year, we would, but especially in the summer, we would always see lower temperatures out there in that forest than we would see in little downtown Raleigh. That's not a big city at all, but in a lot of concrete. And we would see consistently during the summer a 4-degree temperature drop on the thermometer in the car when we would get into the forest. So if they're concerned about heat in Las Vegas, they might want to keep some of the grass and some of the trees. Who knows? They might even be able to work out a deal. Disney is willing to pay for anything green. Pay big bucks, like I pointed out yesterday. Nature Conservancy, ripping these people off. Left and right, these big corporations who are buying indulgences and saying, "Well, you know, we'll pay you to plant a tree." And then they found out that they weren't even planting trees. They were guarding trees that were not in any danger. Of course, you know, you could always make the case that as the trees are absorbing the CO2, they continue to grow. And so, it is increasing the CO2 absorption capacity, but nevertheless, it was Bloomberg was livid. We should all be livid about this whole carbon credit nonsense and the buying of indulgences. Absolute nonsense. Elon Musk, talking about Vegas, he put his public transportation system on display, the boring tunnel that he did in Las Vegas at the expense of $55 million. Turns out to be very boring, indeed. The reviews are in. It was supposed to be Tesla vehicles going up to speeds of 155 miles per hour to turn a 15-minute-long walk into a 2-minute ride. Instead, they've got some Tesla vehicles driven by humans. By humans. What is this about the... Are you telling me that your self-driving capability is so bad that you have to have a human in a tunnel? This is a straight tunnel, I guess. I don't think it's got any turns in it. You can't manage it with the autopilot. Your complete auto capability can't manage that. But it does have, because this is Vegas, it does have LED lights in the tunnel. There you go. Kind of cheesy, evidently, from what people are saying. Jalopnik said Elon Musk's dumb Tesla tunnel is now the lamest thing in Las Vegas. He said it's about as exciting as a sheet of unpainted drywall discarded in a closed office park. It's just some Tesla Model 3s driving very slowly in a tube. All this is some Teslas driving in tunnels lined with LEDs. CNET's Roadshow also said it was lame. And that seemed to be the general consensus. So it must be true because it's a consensus by experts, right? And Elon Musk admitted that it was just Teslas and tunnels at this point. But he said this is way more profound than it sounds. And I think there are some profound aspects of this. Number one, the crony capitalism involved here. The fact that he is given permission to build the tunnel. I don't know if he was given any cash, but he is the king of crony capitalism. He has been given more money than allegedly is Donald Trump's entire net worth. More money was given to Elon Musk for these various projects. And they have been, at least his rockets are not as boring as his tunnels. You know, when you go to watch a Tesla SpaceX rocket land, you're always going to be treated to some fireworks as it explodes on impact. It's kind of like, you know, you can, people would go to the old NASCAR races, or they would, we used to have figure eight stock car races, kind of demolition derbies, actually, at the fair when I was a kid. And so you're always looking for the crash. You don't want anybody to get hurt, but you're always looking for the crash. That's the exciting thing. Well, Tesla and SpaceX do not disappoint on that aspect. And at least there's nobody inside the rocket. So you can enjoy it and not worry about anybody being hurt. One person said Vegas actually let Elon Musk make a less efficient subway system. They really let him make a subsidized Tesla advertisement. It's nothing but a crappy Disney ride, costing $52.5 million. The Boring Construction Company has constructed two one-way 0.8-mile tunnels. So this is kind of profound. $25 million per mile. See, this is why we can't have nice things like infrastructure and roads that work, because nobody knows how to do anything effectively anymore. And in Mexico, we have a violent truck robbery where they held up a Toyota Hilux. That's the way they transport very dangerous radioactive material in Mexico, with a Toyota Hilux. Because, you know, whatever, you go back and you look at the Clarkson and company, they did a great job of a Toyota Hilux when they showed that the thing takes a licking and keeps on ticking. They tried to destroy one, diesel Hilux, which we cannot get in the U.S. because the EPA has prohibited it to us. And so Top Gear did everything they could to try to destroy one that still survived. But you can't evidently rob them. They're not immune to that. And so they got highly radioactive material. This is iridium-192. in case you want to know. But they were violently robbed. And so the question is, did they just want this wonderful Hilux, because it is highly a desirable truck? Did they just want something that was going to last forever? Or did they want something to make a dirty bomb with? So that's a real issue. And they've had material that has been stolen and hijacked situations before where the criminals were just looking for the vehicle. They didn't realize what they had in there. Here's what they have in there. They said the government warned that anybody who has had direct contact with the source, the radioactive material, for hours or days, its effects can be fatal. And they suggested a 30-meter perimeter should be established around the device in case it is found. So they've got some, they got some pretty hot stuff on their hands. So the fences better beware. So far, local authorities have yet to voice their concern about the probabilities that the dangerous material could fall into criminal gang hands, where they could attach it to explosives and produce a dirty bomb. Question is, was this just a hapless carjacking, or were they trying to get this radioactive material? Because if that was the case, you notice we have a border that's completely wide open. I wonder if any of these terrorists have thought about that. Shh, don't tell them. Okay, and on the good side, some good news. Zero Hedge has this from Stark Realities, how state legislators are working to rein in the evil empire of the military-industrial complex. And this involves, I'll have to get Michael Mahaney back on again. 10th Amendment Center is involved in this again. They do a lot of really good work. And they're partnering with a group of conservative, right-leaning veterans who have an organization called BringOurTroopsHome.us. BringOurTroopsHome.us. As the article puts it, fed up, after years of relentless National Guard deployments and undeclared wars, state lawmakers across the country are now pushing legislation that would prohibit the use of National Guard units in combat zones without a formal declaration of war by Congress. Imagine that. And so, as I've said many times, we understand, and these people who are veterans, and the vast majority of them, we'll get into the exact numbers, the vast majority of them, and it's about two-thirds, the people who've been in Iraq and Afghanistan, think that we ought to get out. They regret the situation that's there, and they think we ought to get out of Iraq and Afghanistan. But they came to the realization that individuals that they spoke to in Washington, especially Liz Cheney, a daughter of Darth Vader, have it in their minds that we're never, never going to get out. So how do you stop an out-of-control federal empire? Well, first thing you try is you try to go to the state level, and that's exactly what they're doing. The bill is being promoted by BringOurTroopsHome.us. These are veterans who are working to end American involvement in endless wars, as they put it. The proposed laws would require governors to determine the constitutionality of orders that place guard units on federal active duty. When they're deemed unconstitutional, the governor would be required to take action to prevent the unit from being surrendered to federal control. The first Defend the Guard bill was conceived and introduced by Air Force veteran and West Virginia state legislator Pat McGeehan. While no state has enacted the law yet, interest is spreading widely, and legislators are now pushing the measure in 31 states, and the Pentagon is pushing back. The organization is led by Dan McKnight, a 13-year veteran of the Marine Corps, active duty Army, and Idaho Army National Guard, whose military service ended after he was injured in Afghanistan. McKnight and many other veterans who are leading the drive against the war on terror are from the right side of the political spectrum, a sharp contrast to the typical anti-war veteran of the Vietnam era. But McKnight says that vets from both wars share a common experience. Today's veterans, he says, are coming home and saying the same thing that the Vietnam vets did. What was the point of that? What was our mission? We have no mission. We have no definition of success. We have no clear path to victory. We have no idea what victory means. And we're there without a constitutional authority to send us there. That's what I've said for the longest time. You don't go to a war if you don't even know what winning means. But of course, they don't want to win. They haven't won any of these wars. As they turn into an asymmetric war of occupation, they've lost every single one of them. Lost a lot of lives as well. But the real point is not about victory. The point is to be there. It's just about being there. It's about being there and using this as a live training exercise, as a test ground for weapons, as a place where you can consume the products that are produced by the military-industrial complex, not just consume the lives of soldiers. It's about consuming the missiles and the bombs and the planes and the tanks so we can get more of them. And to play war. Every one of us raised our hands and swore an oath to the Constitution, says McKnight. And when it says, Congress shall be the only body to declare war, we take that to heart. And when Congress doesn't do that, we understand bad things can happen. Long, endless, foreign misadventures. They point out this article on Zero Hedge. In a 2019 Pew Research poll, 64% of veterans said the war in Iraq wasn't worth fighting. 58% said the same thing about Afghanistan. A poll in January showed that 2/3 or more of veterans support full withdrawal from both countries. If you want us to go and bleed and die and spend our lives and your treasure in a foreign land, McKnight said, then Congress should put their name on the line before we put our boots on the ground. The National Guard has played a major role in America's post-9/11 militarism. As recently as December, more than 57,000 Guard members were deployed around the world. Federal government's reliance on the National Guard makes state legislatures an intriguing second front on the drive to curtail the endless wars. Remember when Trump said he was going to do that? Yeah. Defend the Guard laws also give state lawmakers a rare chance to influence foreign policy and to impose consequences for the executive branch's usurpation of war powers. This is not really coming from the executive branch. The executive branch is not really in control. This is coming from the bureaucracy, in this particular case, from the Pentagon. McKnight has friends who have done a staggering 12 to 13 overseas National Guard deployments, and beyond the risk to life and limb, the hardships imposed on individuals, families, and marriages, and he says also communities, because he said Guard members are police officers, tradesmen, mechanics, school teachers, attorneys. When they have to leave that job behind, it puts a burden on the community and on their families. But in terms of what happens in a community, they give a couple examples. When Hurricane Katrina came through in New Orleans, Mississippi's 223rd Engineer Battalion returned from overseas deployment to help with hurricane damage repair, but they were ordered to leave all their equipment in Iraq. In 2020, just last year, as Oregon endured some of the worst wildfires ever, half of the state's National Guard helicopters were in Afghanistan, and all of its CH-47 Chinooks, the big dual rotor choppers capable of carrying 26,000-pound payloads, which are ideal for firefighting. Instead, they had to use Black Hawk helicopters, which have 1/10 the lifting power. They're going to make 10 trips as the fire is spreading to drop the same amount that the Chinook can drop in one mission. McKnight says the military-industrial complex in South Dakota sent a 2-star general to testify and make all kinds of threats to intimidate them. He insinuated the state would lose their National Guard if they passed this bill, which is simply not true. Then in Idaho, a Republican Idaho representative, Joe Palmer, another one of these Republican backstabbers. Now watch these people, I'll tell you. Don't trust the party label. Don't look for the union label. Republican Representative Joe Palmer seemed to resort to underhanded tactics to kill or defend the guard bill. He put the measure to an initial procedural vote in committee and declared it to have failed by voice vote. Video of the proceedings, however, shows the result of the voice vote was not clear at all. And McKnight says his group's post-vote polling of members suggests the measure would have advanced if they'd had a recorded vote. But he intimidated them, right? And he used parliamentary procedure. One of the reasons why I could never be in the legislative body is just beyond, it just drives me up a wall. You know, people who get into Robert's Rules of Order and shut everything down. Anyway, if you want to play parliamentary tricks, and the price of your tricks is the blood of my brothers and sisters who deploy over and over again, then we're going to take some blood of our own. And we're going to do that the way that politicians understand. And that's with voters in the primary and in the general election. So they are working to get this guy out of office, and deservedly so. In West Virginia, McGahn said he was summoned to, this is the guy who wrote the bill, the Defend the Guard bill in West Virginia. So he said that what they did with him was not in front of the cameras. He was summoned into the office of the commander of the State National Guard, and the general said that he'd received a call from the Pentagon threatening that if the Defend the Guard bill became law, West Virginia bases would find themselves targeted for closure. When we look at the way these people operate, it is always with the financial purse strings. They incentivize the kind of behavior that they want. This is why I say we're on day 395 here in America, because that was when Trump issued the executive order declaring a national state of emergency. That did the types of things that you always see happening with a state of emergency. If it's a hurricane, Katrina, whatever, it unleashes all kinds of money for people. And that money is going to keep flowing by the trillions to these states as long as they keep the pandemic going. And it wasn't just that. The Trump administration financially incentivized as well. So you had both a carrot and a stick to the medical community. We need you to get all these non-essential people, anything that's not COVID, get them out of the hospitals. But if you got a COVID case, instant $12,000. If you can put them on a ventilator, an instant $39,000, and you're already in the black with that ventilator, and on and on. And then afterwards, giving them a 20 to 25% bonus for all of the charges that the patient incurred while they were in the hospital. When you incentivize behavior, and this is the way the federal government always works, it's the way Biden is working now, it's the way Trump worked. Trump owns the pandemic. Trump financed the pandemic. He incentivized the pandemic. He left Fauci on the podium. Only now do you see a little bit of pushback against Fauci by Rand Paul, and we'll cover that later today. But that's how they do this, and threatening to have financial recrimination. We'll take away some of that money that we're pouring into your state. We're going to close some of those bases. In Wyoming, Liz Cheney got involved. He said she is, quote, the most offensive opposition that we've ever faced. Congresswoman Liz Cheney, the daughter of Dick. He said, when we pushed this in Wyoming, she or her staff contacted members of the Wyoming legislature and said, quote, if this passes in Wyoming, I will personally see to it that two C-130 aircraft are stripped from Wyoming and sent to Texas. Is that a real C-130 is the big troop transport thing. I don't know what the financial impact of that is, perhaps because it's such a gigantic plane, that there's a lot of ancillary support surrounding it, because it's fundamentally going to be an economic issue. So I'm going to take two of those away. Bethany Baldez, Wyoming State Director for BringOurTroopsHome.us, was also on hand. She, too, says that lawmakers told her they received calls from Cheney's office that included threats to send the cargo planes to Texas. Cheney, who McKnight describes as a, quote, warmonger heiress of a military-industrial fortune. What a perfect way to describe Liz Cheney. A warmonger heiress of a military-industrial fortune. We went to Liz Cheney's office and we asked her, what conditions must be met on the ground for you to support ending the war in Afghanistan and bringing our troops home? She said, I don't think I could ever support that position. I'm not ever going to support bringing them. Pressing the issue, they asked her how long troops should remain. McKnight says, she looked us stone-faced in the eye and said, forever. American troops will be in Afghanistan forever. That's when we decided it was time to step away from the swamp and work at the state level and force the states to force Congress's hand. Let me tell you, this is true. Glad they had that realization. They will not, the American troops will not be there forever. They'll be there until the American empire falls. And our presence in Afghanistan and warmongering heiresses to the military-industrial fortune like Liz Cheney will be the ones that bring it down. Afghanistan, it's been said, is where empires go to die. So there's the silver lining. sooner the better, in my opinion. The problem, though, is that it is absolutely useless to think that you're going to have a president. If you didn't notice what happened with Trump, he would say, well, I want to bring the troops home as running as a candidate. And they even mentioned it several times as president, and you would immediately have somebody from the Pentagon, from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, come out and say, no, we're not leaving. Just as adamant as Liz Cheney was to these people. He would do that in defiance and in insubordination to the president. And, of course, Trump wouldn't do anything about anything. He's going to sit on the toilet and tweet. But you also had the arrogance of people like Mike Pompeo, who said, yeah, he says things like that, but we talked to him and explained to him how it's going to be. So if you think that any president, even somebody who blusters a lot, like Trump, to make you think that he's strong, you think any president's going to be able to turn around this, like trying to turn a aircraft carrier around on a dime? It's got too much inertia. It needs too much of an area to turn around. You're not going to turn this thing around in Washington. You're going to have to isolate it. You're going to have to sink it from outside of Washington, and I'm glad they understand that about the wars, and that's a good approach to start to do that at the state level. We need to open up all the different avenues that we can to shut this down. We have a UN agency that's drafted a blueprint for unrestricted access to abortion. What a surprise. Last week, the UN Women's Agency and the government of Mexico co-hosted an online forum to commemorate 25 years since the launch of the Beijing Platform for Action on Women's Rights. Let's talk about the hypocrisy of Beijing talking about women's rights. These are the people who, at the behest of the globalists like Henry Kissinger and others at the time who were opening up to China, they got China to basically implement the policies that they would like to see. And part of that was the one-child policy. And because of that one-child policy, we have a situation in China that's frequently been referred to as gendercide. Gendercide. If I'm only going to have one child, they reason, I don't want it to be female. I want it to be a male. And so they would have preemptive abortions if they had a child that was female. They would take the child, give the child up for adoption, even healthy children, and so that nobody knew that that was their child, and they could try again. So some of them killed their kids. Some of them gave them up for adoption. Nevertheless, you wound up with gendercide. Talk about women's rights coming out of Beijing, coming out of the UN. It was UN, the UN in China. It was the globalists in China who did this to women and who are pushing the LGBT agenda that is coming after women now. They talked about bodily autonomy. That's their euphemism for abortion. Bodily autonomy. These are the same people who don't want you to have any informed consent about your vaccines. And they have the audacity to speak about bodily autonomy. They said, we support the removal of restrictive policies and legal barriers ensuring 50 million more adolescent girls and women to have legal abortion by 2026. And as the International Women's Health Coalition said, former president, it's so heartening to see that abortion is fully included in all of this. It's in distinction to another UN group, which has is representative of the different states. But this one is from the UN Women, an agency of the UN. And this is really more indicative of the bureaucracy. And let me tell you, we have a situation now where it is the bureaucracies who decide everything. The bureaucracies are deciding everything in each one of our countries globally. And in the global bureaucracy of the UN, same thing is happening there as well. Ecuador, why do I talk about this? Well, remember, it was the Ecuadorian embassy that Julian Assange was in. They've now elected a conservative president, saying never again to a socialist past. Yeah, it was the previous president, a socialist Marxist, who cooperated with the Five Eyes intelligence agencies of the U.S. and the U.K. to come after Julian Assange and to turn him over. And this guy is a conservative former banker, so watch out. Not sure if they're jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. anyway, this is his second time to run. He lost the first time to Lenin Moreno. he was a socialist, shall we say, or a communist, kind of like Buttigieg's mentor, Sokvan Berkovich. He took his name, he changed his name to make it a contraction of Sacco and Vanzetti, the heroes to these communist Marxists. Moreno, like his forerunner, ran for president as a socialist candidate. He was endorsed by Rafael Correa, who ran the country from 2007 to 2017. Correa's tenure was defined by Ecuador's support for dictators in Cuba, Venezuela, and China. He made violent threats against journalists and conservatives. And then when he got in office, he started arresting a lot of people that he considered to be his enemies, including fellow communists. Well, it's kind of like what his namesake Lenin did to Trotsky. There is no honor among thieves. These people are nothing other than thieves with armies, these communists. So the banker who comes in says, well, I'm not arriving with a list of people to persecute and to put in jail. I want to see all Ecuadorians free, not afraid of their government, without fear of dissenting with the president of the republic, and to be able to express their opinions with freedom. Maybe we could get him put in charge of YouTube. All right, as I pointed out at the beginning of the show, I was purged out of the YouTube channel, but that's okay because we hadn't been able to post up videos there for several months. Just started posting them up again. We had two strikes against us, so we knew the one next one was going to be it. Not interested in going back. I mean, I might put up music channel there and kind of independently plug the show from there. I don't know. There's a big audience on YouTube, which is why I keep going back there. I despise the people. I despise Google. They hate me. I probably hate them more than they hate me, actually. but nothing of any substance can be discussed there. It has become a perfect example of technocratic censorship. We'll be talking more about that coming up in the show when we have Goat Tree joining us. We'll be talking about some very nightmarish tech, about implants, mind control, electroceuticals, things like that. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about vaccines. So stay with us. Meanwhile, this is where you can find me outside of YouTube. I'm many other places.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Welcome back. I had a letter that came to me. Actually, it was last week, April 6th, email. And by the way, if you want to send comments or news tips to us, that is davidknightshow@protonmail.com. This is Jeff. He said, I heard you talking on your show today about churches, talking about taking the vaccine, telling people to take the vaccine, to show love for their neighbor. Now, let me be clear. My church hasn't said that about vaccines, but they have been saying that about masks, and that's the preparation. That's what the masks are for. The masks are placeholders. Everything that they've told people to sell them vaccines in the past, and even to sell vaccine mandates for MMR, it's all the same things they're saying about the masks. This is why anybody who has covered this in alternative media should have known this from the beginning, and people who jumped in on this and cheered this in alternative media, they were deceiving you. They were throwing you under the bus for money, those people, because we all knew it. We all knew it. We'd been reporting this for a long time. Anyway, so yeah, the mask is the psychological preparation for the vaccine mandates, because they've said all this to get their vaccine mandates in the past. I haven't been to my local church in over a year because they weren't open, and if they were open, they required masks. And so he said, here's a letter that they sent and my reply. So the pastor sent a thing, hey, fella, I hope you and yours are doing well. I just wanted to follow up on your email from Saturday. It said, the largest factor in our decision to do one moving mask service and one fully masked service in this season is that there are a significant number of people who are not permitted to attend in person, whether or not we agree with it, because of their school or workplace's policy requirements. Our goal is just to create an environment where the most people from our church family in this season are able to come and engage with us in person. There is literally science to back up any and every position related to all things COVID, says the pastor. No. Accordingly, we don't take anyone's specific version of science to be definitive. He just did. But we try to do our best job we can to listen to as many sources of advice as we can. You know, we go to the CDC, and he lists them, the Pennsylvania Department of Health, the CDC, our denomination, our ministry board, our area doctors. He says, we then seek God to help us to shuffle through all the input advice and then pray about what decisions we feel God is calling us to that best align with our goal I mentioned above. Well, see, if he hadn't lived the lie, he would know that it is a lie. He might also take a look at some other churches that have not lived the lie. MacArthur's in California, James Coates in Edmonton, and many, many, many others. They were just the two that have been attacked because they show up with thousands of people over, now it's about 9 months. Nobody gets sick. Meeting in open defiance of every one of these rituals that have been imposed on us by the State Department of Health, by the CDC, even by your denomination in many cases. And Jeff said, I'd like for you to consider the following in your future guidance. He replied to him. He says, I think we can all agree this world is corrupted. I want to offer some caution with following the world's science. I believe it is littered with deception and half-truths. Same community of science believes that abortion is okay. And you'll find these same denomination leaders who will tell you that vaccines and other medicines that are products of abortion and specifically murder for hire are just fine and ethical. And we should support the companies that produce this so they can continue to do that kind of practice. The same community of science that believes abortion is okay, or that a person born a man can be a woman. The same community that is telling us to fear a virus, it is telling us that we need to fill in the blank for public safety. Do whatever we say. The masks, the social distancing continue to propagate the fear. Now their message is that a vaccine will save us. Science is turning into a religion of its own. Yes, it is. Scientism. It's not science. I feel like we're blending in with the rest of the world when it comes to COVID. We are propagating the fear. There will be things like this in the future. Will we always default to what science tells us to do? And that's what government tells us. But I love you guys. I'm not trying to make your jobs more difficult, but I wanted to share my concerns. I would suggest you find another church. There are churches out there who are serious. There are churches out there who fear God, not Fauci. Find that church. Or start your own. If you can't find anybody in your area, just start meeting with some neighbors. It's always better to have a church, but you need to be in community with people. And that's what this is all about. And if you have a church leader who is so dense that they don't understand the importance of the body meeting together corporately, in person, of all things, a church should understand that. A church that doesn't understand that, that thinks that this is about somebody getting up on a podium and delivering a speech every week, that can easily be replaced with a Zoom meeting, but that's not what church is about. So find a real church. They're playing church there. The WHO says COVID pandemic is growing exponentially. We got new cases here. We got 4 million new cases here. Why is this happening now? Because of a couple of reasons. Number one, there is no limit to the number of bogus tests that they have now. Everybody is flush with tests. And they're also flush with vaccines. And I think the vaccines, and we're going to examine this, we'll look at the vaccines, exactly what the vaccines are doing. They call it a breakthrough case. We got new cases. We got breakthrough cases. We got cases where the virus was able to break through after the people got vaccinated. It wasn't able to break through for the last year for these people, right? But as soon as they took the vaccine, somehow it broke through. I don't get it. We know exactly what's happening here. It's not a coincidence that this is happening. As one guy who worked in a assisted care nursing home said in tears at the beginning of this, back in January, he said, we didn't have a single case of COVID. Nobody got sick for the entire year. We vaccinated everybody, and within 2 weeks, we had 14 people who had died. A lot of other people who have had strokes and other issues are just zombies now. He said it in tears. He said, I can't do this. I can't do this job anymore. He is working and helping and caring for these people, and he has a connection to these people. And he was a Christian, so maybe some of these pastors ought to listen to him. We've seen that story over and over again. I said, this is one of the health experts, Maria Van Kerkhove. She said, she's with the World Health Organization. This is not the situation we want to be in 16 months into a pandemic where we have proven control measures. Are they proven? Well, yes, they are. Proven failures by their own measure. So if they believe their cases, if they believe the test results, they should believe that their rituals are proven failures. But they don't. No. We need to keep, if it doesn't work, if it fails, the answer is always with a government agency and a bureaucracy. What is the answer? It's always do more of the same thing, right? If what we did didn't work, let's hire more people and spend more money to continue to do the same thing. And that's exactly what they're doing right now. Vaccines and vaccinations, she said, are coming online, but they're not here yet in every part of the world. But in the places where they are, that's where things are getting the worst. Where the people are following their rituals, that's where things are getting to be the worst. Now, the CDC's Walensky says the answer is we need to accelerate our vaccination efforts. That is always the answer. That was the ransomware, as I said yesterday, from the very beginning. In Colorado, you have the governor there, Paulus. Health officials are warning of a fourth and final wave, and this one will affect young people. So be very afraid. That's what they're telling us. They know this in advance somehow. Paulus and health officials, in addressing the shutdown of what happened in at Dick's Sporting Goods, right? They talked about how, and when it first came out, it was 18 people. Then they dropped it to 13. Now they're sticking to 11. They dropped it in half. They said, we've looked at this. The CDC has told us that it's safe. The CDC that makes billions of dollars selling these vaccines says it's safe. So it's safe. They believe it was a coincidence that a group of people had these reactions in such a short period of time. It's just a coincidence. They're coincidence theorists. One doctor said the reactions were likely due to dehydration or a fear of needles. We've had this happen, a dozen or so people, in four different states. It all happened at the same time with the same vaccine, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. People immediately passing out and having other issues. At this particular site in Colorado, they had two ambulances take people to the hospital. But in every one of these instances, even though the people who were there are alarmed, even though the people who are administering the vaccines are concerned about it and shut it down, then the bureaucrats come in, the local bureaucrats and the state government bureaucrats, and say, no problem. So it's dehydration, perhaps the fear of needles. Perhaps it was the heat. Perhaps it was the vapors. Let me tell you, it's not fear of needles. They were there because they feared, but not needles. Here's the statement from one of the people in Georgia, where they also had this. Four different states, they had places that shut down. This is one of the victims of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in Georgia, dismissing the idea, as I said there, maybe it's because of the heat. No, not at all. Here's what she had to say.
In the Johnson & Johnson vaccine incoming, and our state isn't alone. CBS 46's Jamie Kennedy speaking exclusively to one woman who suffered side effects.
My limbs started going numb. My face went numb.
Sarah Moore says she's still processing the last few days being bedridden after having a frightening reaction to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
It's scary because, you know, passing out once is not my concern. It's, you know, passing out multiple times and then having 103.5 degree fever for the remaining, like, 2 days after that.
She is one of eight people who had an adverse reaction on the same day at the same DPH site at the Cumming Fairgrounds.
Within 2 to 3 minutes, I knew that I was going to pass out. You know, my vision was going out, my hearing was going out.
The DPH paused Johnson & Johnson vaccines at the Cumming site. DPH Commissioner Dr. Kathleen Toomey says they are looking at what may have caused the reactions, including the conditions at the fairgrounds, such as heat and the ability to keep the site cool. Heat, Sarah says, has nothing to do with it.
It was not hot out. It was not even 70 degrees, I don't think. I was in a hoodie and jeans and felt very comfortable, not hot.
Sarah says after initially passing out, she awoke lying across three chairs and saw another person feeling extremely ill.
There was a girl about 15 feet away from me, and she was getting transported out on the stretcher.
Colorado, Iowa, and North Carolina also suspended Johnson & Johnson vaccines at least one site because of reactions. The CDC responding tonight with this statement saying the CDC performed vaccine lot analysis and has not found any reason for concern. Right now, they are not recommending health departments stop administering any lots of the COVID-19 vaccine. Now, Sarah tells me she passed out a total of three times during her ordeal and that she doesn't have any previous or underlying health conditions. She said if she had her time over, she would consider another vaccine or waiting for more research to come out. At CDC headquarters, Jamie Kennedy, CBS 46 News.
Yeah, maybe you'd want to wait until they actually test the thing. If you're going to be a guinea pig, you know, they used to pay people quite handsomely to subject themselves to medical experimentation. But of course, these people, all they get out of it is a little bit of virtue signaling on social media. How sad that is. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky, remember her? Right now, I'm scared. And as she continued to read off the script, she says, I have a sense of impending doom. Yeah, that's it, man. We're going to buy it right here on this rock. Well, now she's saying, we got to close everything down. Come on, close everything down in Michigan. He said, the answer is not necessarily to give vaccines. In fact, we know the vaccine will have a delayed response. So right now, we just got to close everything down until we get more vaccines out there and get everybody vaccinated. And this has been the ransomware from the very beginning. We're going to lock you down, keep you there. We don't want you, as the former president, CEO of Planned Parenthood said, we can't let these people out until we get the vaccine. Come on. We got to leave that as a carrot for them to get out. And that's exactly what Walensky is doing with the CDC right now. That's always been the plan. And so she goes on with Cuomo on CNN and says, you know, you let them out. You let them have freedom. You'll never get them to take the vaccine. It was always about coercing a vaccine. And this is why they're doing this. They are concerned that people have seen through their censorship. YouTube is partnering with them, of course, but so is all the media, to cover up what's happening to people. And they want to make sure that in the face of rising skepticism, that they coerce more and more people. Had a lot of individuals reported. I've seen it in other articles. They've sent information to me saying, you know, have family members, and they have concerns about taking an experimental, untested vaccine, a jab. They know about the genetic modification issues with this and how this is unique, how it's untested. But they're just tired of being kept locked down and locked in. And that's exactly the cynical calculation of these globalists, people like Walensky. He said, the answer is that we've got to really close things down. To go back to our basics, to go back to where we were last spring, last summer, to flatten the curve. Flatten the curve. How many times are they going to look right into the camera and lie to your face about this before you stop living the lie? We've got to decrease contact with each other. We have to test to the extent that we have available, and we have to contact trace. And, of course, Gretchen Whitmer at Michigan is more than happy to take her up on that. She's just waiting to put on her jackboots and start kicking people around. She says, yes, I am seeing a surge. Maybe she even says it like Fauci, surge of coronavirus cases, despite implementing strict restrictions on residents. So, you know, it just keeps going. When we have, she says, the answer, of course, is to close everything down. Let me tell you, that is exactly what they intend to do. And I've covered the remarks of Naomi Wolf before, first came to our attention when she went on with Tucker Carlson, very strong in terms of understanding where this is headed. She's been on the left. She's been pushing women's rights and things like that. So, not on the radar of many of us. Tucker Carlson said, to my shame, I never listened to what you had to say just because I figured I would disagree with you. But she knows exactly what this is about. Nobody speaks with more clarity about how this is a war on humanity. Here's Naomi Wolf.
We have to face where we are if we're going to survive it. There is a war on humanity. There's a war on religion. There's a war on human assembly. Big tech wants to drive everyone indoors and dissolve the bonds between people. The guy, you know, I've said this many times in recent days, but the real pandemic, which is now an endemic, it's turning into something we live with every year, has provided cover for very dark forces to terrorize human assembly and to do what you're right to point out is illegal, which is to violate the Constitution, First Amendment, Fourth Amendment. Now there's vaccine passports rolling out to violate the Americans with Disabilities Act, to assault the ways in which human beings gather strength and community from each other so that there will be, as you point out, kind of new overlords. And it, you know, it doesn't have to be that kind of mystical. You just look at the five big tech bros. They're up $22 billion to over $100 billion since March of 2020. There is a war against human beings, and the right to worship is one of the, you know, tyrants on the left and the right. Totalitarian states always go after churches and synagogues and mosques, always try to target outspoken clergy and target the idea of faith, because that's where people derive strength and community from. And we're at step 10. You know, I argued then that there are 10 steps to fascism. And, you know, here we are. Emergency law is the 10th step. And in Massachusetts, I live under emergency law. Next door, New York, lives under emergency law. There's emergency law in California. This is the end of democracy, and they are not giving up these powers. We have to be winter soldiers now. This crisis has never been worse, and we have to join together across party lines. If my people on the left won't join me, I have to create new allies and form new friendships. And that's true for people across the political spectrum, because saving the Constitution, saving our freedoms is more important than partisanship right now.
Isn't it amazing? I read you that letter from a listener. It was written by a pastor who had absolutely no understanding, no discernment about what this lady, who has hung out on the left, a feminist, says this is a war on religion. Do you not understand this, pastor? How can you have less discernment than a person who, I don't think she even identifies as a Christian, but how can a pastor lack that much discernment? She talks about how this is to dissolve the bonds between people, how there are dark forces materialized and terrorizing us, how every totalitarian state always goes after the churches first. And she mentioned churches, synagogues, mosques, because it is the connection that we have to each other that has to be destroyed for these people. How can a pastor not care about the erasure of the rule of law? You talk about government obedience in the context of Romans 13, but you don't understand the importance of law? How do you reconcile that? You push tyranny while dismissing any threat to law and order that is in alignment with God's order. And how do you support, again, not doing anything to protect the bonds between people? How do you support hiding your light under a basket? Pathetic. By the way, James Coates, one of the things that was mentioned briefly in the clip that I had yesterday from MacArthur. Other people, I saw some other clips on social media. People who attended that church said, oh, by the way, just so you know, we still met as a church. We're not telling you where. At some point, you do have to go underground, but you know they're not trying to hide their disobedience. They're just trying to make sure that their first priority is that they have worship. Their first priority is not about this is not about civil disobedience primarily. This is not about a political reestablishment of the law. James Coates understands that if you expose the lies, if you show people that the emperor has no clothes, that the emperor has no pandemic, then things will fall into place because people are very tired of this and they're living in fear and ignorance. And so the purpose, as James Coates sees it, of the church is to live out the truth, to live out the truth that there is no pandemic. They have been doing that for the last 7 months. That is why they arrested him and put him in jail for 35 days. That is why they locked up the church. That is why they have delayed his trial. Until after the date, they say they're going to open things up. Well, it remains to be seen if they're going to do that or not. I would imagine that even if they extend the opening up date, they will extend his trial as well, because they don't want to have his trial until it becomes a moot point. They don't want a discussion of his rebellion to their nonsense rules for 9 months and how it had absolutely no real-world scientific, medical, physiological consequences. Because then that would show this is just a raw exercise of power. Pastors need to understand that. If you're in a church where the pastor is that lacking in discernment after a year, I understand. At the beginning of this, I thought it might be real as well, but it didn't stop me from what I was doing because I realized that I would rather be dead than to live under this type of system that we now put in. And even if it was real, they would have us locked up in this kind of system. I can take care of myself. I can understand the risks. If I need to isolate from people because it is a real pandemic, I will do that. I didn't believe it was because I believed it was coming from China. It was coming from the globalists. So I was always leaning to the side that it was a head fake, which it turned out to be, fortunately for us, this time. But they've been working on this, and they're working on how they can do a cyber pandemic And they've been training for that now for a couple of years. We're going to be talking to Goatree in the third hour about that. But I understand that people had concern. I understand that a lot of people had not watched Fauci and the CDC lie to people on an annual basis about the flu, to get the flu vaccines taken by people. And I really respect people who show up to church wearing a mask because they're still afraid of what's going on. But they have the courage to show up even wearing a mask. So I don't discourage people from doing that. But I'm not going to do it because for me, that would be participating in a lie that I know all too well. And as more and more people see this, more and more masks come off, and they're not going to go back on. Not with this. They're going to have to come up with a real pandemic, and they probably will. Part of the pandemic, of course, that we're seeing is the central control, these arbitrary rules, locking down this business because it's not essential and the other business because it's not essential, and the unintended consequences. We've seen it now from toilet paper, as I pointed out last week, chips and ketchup, the electronic chips that are shutting down the automakers. Biden has a solution, however. Wait for it. Money. Tens of billions of dollars in money to semiconductor manufacturers to ramp up their production, to change it over, because he's already interfered in the economy. He and Trump, once, you know, when we saw the shortages of toilet paper, again, it was because the way the distribution channels had set up to people living their normal lives, responding to supply and demand and the way that people moved, people were blocked from going into the institutions where they used to spend a lot of time, whether that was places of work or restaurants or other things like that, where they would supply the toilet paper in a different format than they would for home. So that is a big issue that drove the toilet paper shortage. And that's really what is at work here with the semiconductor chips that are being used in automobiles. And it was also a part of what is happening with the food, with the ketchup, as well as with why you saw people destroying food on their farms and dairies while you had empty grocery store shelves. It's because they were set up to provide that food and that ketchup to industrial uses, restaurant uses and so forth. And because they shut down the restaurants and because they shut down the places where people get the ketchup and get the other food and those other formats, they couldn't get it into the format where people could get it in the grocery stores. And so all of this is because they went through and disrupted with edicts how the marketplace was working. So Intel has announced that it's going to start making chips for car plants because Biden is going to give the semiconductor industry, I don't know how much Intel is going to get, but he's going to throw $50 billion at them. And so for $50 billion, yeah, we'll open up some factories, but it's going to take us 6 to 9 months minimum to open up a factory, even if we throw massive amounts of money at it. National Security Advisor said in a statement, trying to address supply chains on a crisis-by-crisis basis creates critical national security vulnerabilities. Oh, yes, it does. And it makes our life hell, too, because you've turned America, that was once vibrant, where we didn't need to have a central planner to create products, to create even pencils, as I point out many times. If you don't know it, look at Leonard Reed's iPencil. No central planner, but all of these different components that go into a pencil, and it's because of supply and demand and people just responding to market forces. A great example of how free market works, and what we've seen in the last year is a great example of how a centrally planned and controlled Soviet economy works. And we've seen what the long-term outcome of that is. And that's precisely what these people want, precisely what they want. How the computer chip shortage is rattling the economy. It's made it difficult, they said, for schools to have enough laptops for students. And this is what I'm talking about in terms of the redistribution of how people get, for example, their computer chips, in the same way redistribution of how people get their toilet paper or their vegetables or their milk, the ketchup or whatever. All of this is now what's happening. Because as people went home, they started buying more laptops and personal computers, even though the computer industry had been going into a slump. Then it went into a massive rebound because now people are buying the infrastructure so they can work from home. Isn't it interesting that Trump and his Goldman Sachs bankers who wrote the tax code removed the employee business expense deduction for your income taxes before all this happened? How convenient. I'm sure it was a coincidence, don't you think? Factories are shutting down because there aren't enough chips to finish building vehicles that are starting to look like computers on wheels. And so I ask, you know, we got two cars, 12 years old, maybe. Could I possibly get one? Can I do a deal with these guys? I'll tell you what. You just put in bare bones system. Just give me a car that only has electromechanical stuff. Do you still have any of that stuff around? If you got any of that stuff around, I don't need the chips. I especially don't want the ones that are going to counter-steer me when I have to do a rapid movement across the lane. You know, I got a deer that's coming into the road, and I want to get into the other lane, but it thinks that I'm drifting over the lane, so it counter-steers me. I don't want that. I don't want something that's going to do automatic braking and second-guess me. Can you give me a model that doesn't have all of this electronic gadgetry on it? Just an old electromechanical car? Probably not. But I tell you, I would take that if they could give me a stripped-down thing. As it is, I have to strip it down myself. No one entered 2020 expecting to see a spike in personal computer sales after nearly a decade of steady decline, but that happened. And then you have Sony and Microsoft jumping into their next-generation video game consoles because, you know, again, people have to work at home. They have to entertain themselves at home. So everybody's buying computers and video games. They're ramping up the chips so they can roll out the 5G network to control us everywhere. But all these things are competing with the cars, and the cars are taking, a back seat. We have a French audience has now developed a taste for window theater. And why not? Because this whole pandemic has been nothing but window dressing and theater, hasn't it? Window dressing and theater. Grandpa was exactly right when he called it theater when he was addressing Fauci. In Paris, you had a small crowd of several dozen people who gathered to watch some people who were desperate to act. it's in their blood. They just got to perform in front of people. I don't understand that, frankly. But they were desperate to have an audience and to interact with people. So they promoted this, had some notices on social media. I'm surprised they didn't get banned and shut down to say that they're going to have this. But they're behind a glass, and they warn people to stand well apart, bring your masks, and social distance so we can avoid trouble with the cops. The cops. They're going to show up to hassle people for standing on a street corner now. That's where we are in 2021, after 2020. Think about that. Think about that, how we have so many, we're over-policed in these big cities. We have too many cops. We have too many laws. I mean, I think that's the big takeaway, in my opinion, from the Dante Wright thing. We are over-policed, and the police are under-trained. That's exactly what's happened with the Dante Wright thing. And I wish we could focus on those core issues instead of making this about race. I'll talk more about that in a moment here. But again, the pandemic, window dressing and theater. It's an act of defiance to say that we're here and ready to perform anywhere. Is it really? They're behind a glass. It's a little bit. It's a start, as Solzhenitsyn would say. You know, it begins with a small step. And so this is a small step, and we should not denigrate that. I'm glad that they're there, that they have a desire. They said, we need art, we need to think, we need to dream, we need to cry. Everyone misses the theater. In the street, the audience depended on a speaker to convey the lines of these two performers, Etienne Coquerot and his partner. Inside the boutique, because they went to an apparel store, which the apparel store is closed, of course. So they performed inside the closed apparel store, in the window. I mean, a year ago, could you have understood that it was going to get this crazy? I knew it was going to be tyrannical. I didn't know exactly that it would take this crazy a form. I'd be lying if I told you that I thought you'd have people in closed clothing stores in Paris performing in the windows. So he said any intimacy was reduced by the wall of glass that separated him from the audience. But there was still a connection, he said. Still a connection. The article from Epoch Times, you'll also find it on Zero Hedge, why young adults are the most scared of COVID, even though they're the least at risk. And that, I think, is one of the more interesting phenomena about this. As I said many times, the risk starts to go up, 55, 60, starts to increase, and then goes up, of course, you'd be looking at it this way, goes up exponentially with age. And it looks like the actuarial tables, because that's what it is. They relabel it to be COVID. When you had the real epidemic of the 1918 pandemic flu, it was evenly distributed over all demographics, but not this one. And yet, I would say that if you look at people's, even though that is a line that goes up, you know, exponentially with age, I would say that the fear and the compliance goes up exponentially, goes down exponentially with age. So it's inversely proportional to age. And that's exactly what they're seeing here. Fewer than half, or nearly half, of Americans between 18 and 34 are concerned about returning to normal social life after the pandemic. And it gets even worse with the young children because they don't know what's going on. That's why they want to grab them in kindergarten and put masks on them and train them up in the new normal, and why you should not allow your children to be abused that way. It is abuse. Not being able to see faces, not being able to breathe, the brain damage that's done to these children, the increased health risk that's done to them, long-term issues. Long-term issues. We always knew that. The truth about it was well known by OSHA and others, and now we're doing this to children. But the fear and the psychological control goes up inversely proportional to the age. Much, much higher. And then it drops. So that when you get to people, the geezer generation like me, we never participated in this street theater. The people that I see walking around, whenever I see somebody not wearing a mask, it's somebody old like me. And one of the reasons for that is, number one, this is not our first rodeo with government liars. The other reason is that because, as I remember an interview with a husband and wife who were in their 80s, they were very upset because they're retired. They thought they'd be traveling, taking vacations. Now they're locked down. Said, I don't have that many years left, and I don't want to spend it locked away. You know, even if she lives longer, she may not have the ability to travel. That ability that she currently has is denied her. And she was upset about that, and rightfully so. As we get older, we realize just how short life is and how little time we have left, and we're not inclined to let somebody like Fauci steal it from us. The death rate in New York City for adults age 75 and older was about 500 times higher than the death rate for people in the 18 to 24 age range. And yet, who is afraid? It's the people in the 18 to 24 age range more than anything else. It is a self-imposed imprisonment. And so, as the author from the Epoch Times is saying, I was expecting when I looked into this, you know, we all know, according to the CDC even, that young people are less likely to die. So I was expecting when I looked into this to find a bunch of articles and research showing that young people have relatively little to fear from the coronavirus. But that's not what happened. Here's the top results that I got when he looked into the search term was young people less likely to die from COVID. Instead, what he found was this, coming from the liars and the propagandists at Google who carefully curate information to you, the people at Pravda. So what they served him up was coronavirus and COVID-19. Younger adults are at risk too, says Johns Hopkins. Next one from The Atlantic. What young, healthy people have to fear from COVID-19? From the University of Minnesota. Data reveal deadlines of COVID-19, even in young adults. From MVC. Young people are at risk of severe COVID-19 illness. From KHN. Dying young, the healthcare workers in their 20s, killed by COVID-19. So this is nothing other than deliberate lies and misinformation. The lying government can't even get their story consistent across the media and across Google. But this is the media and Google serving you up lies. Google is a search engine designed to hide things. It is designed to push a narrative. It was designed and financed by DARPA from the beginning for this very purpose. Australians are now looking at at IDs for access to Facebook and Twitter. And when we talk to GoatTree, we'll talk about how this is precisely what they are talking about doing with the cyber polygon. And of course, it's got three key aspects in it. The first one, as they're telling the people what they need to do, first one is we got to have a global ID so we know who everybody is and we know who the bad actors are so we can punish them and remove them. And that's part of the censorship. But the censorship extends not just to individuals who need to be purged, but to reporters and to websites and to news organizations that need to be purged. And then, of course, the final recommendation from Davos is that the government needs corporations to help them make this happen. This is about corporate-government partnership because the corporations are elevating themselves to the level of government explicitly, although we know that they're above the government. They're the ones who are truly in control. But they want to be seen as partners. This is nothing other than fascism, pure fascism. As a matter of fact, before we get GoatTree on, let me just give you an example of what they're telling people with their cyber polygon. Here we go.
2020, the year that has really changed the world. It is thanks to technology that we are able to join the cyber polygon entirely remotely.
This training is another step in creating a trusted digital environment and fostering open dialogue to discuss even the most challenging cybersecurity issues.
Nobody can fight these phenomena, which are only going to increase in the next couple of years, in this dynamic technological environment.
This world grows in force, and this happens throughout the world. It's just a statement of the obvious. You need to protect people properly.
That is the commercial put together by the old Nazi Klaus Schwab to push his confab this summer in July 2021. We'll be talking about that. But again, the point is that they've got to protect you from information. You're too stupid to be able to vet this information. So you're a victim of somebody like me. I'm there to manipulate you and to lie to you because I'm a, I don't know, I've got billions of dollars worth of goods to sell you. I want to control and dictate everything to your life. I'm going to profit from unending war. So that's, I guess that's my motivation to do this. No, that's their motivation to do that. You have to be protected from people like me because you're too stupid to vet the information. And so we have to have a way to respond to this existential threat to the corporatocracy. And that means to censor me, to give you an ID so they know if you're listening to me or to somebody else. That's where we're going to go. That's why this whole thing about being kicked off of YouTube is really pretty small. If you understand where this is headed, if you understand what Microsoft is doing at the behest and the financing of DARPA to put together the CCPA, they call it the C2PA, so you don't see the similarity to China, the Chinese Communist Party, CCP. And it really is a Communist Party, Communist Chinese Party agenda. But Microsoft is setting up three different spheres. Shut this down. Hardware, working with Intel, working with ARM, the CPUs to identify you. The software, working with Adobe and other software creators to mark the documents that you produce as well, along with the hardware. And then finally, to make a coalition with the various ministries of truth, the government partners, people like the BBC, New York Times, The Australian government is mulling a proposal that would require citizens to provide at least two forms of identification in order to use social media. They're right there. That's precisely what Davos proposed last year and is proposing again this year. And the Australian government is right there to do it. Not Orwellian at all, is it? Comment from recommendations that they're putting in there. They say, in order to open or to maintain an existing social media account, customers should be required by law to identify themselves to a platform using 100 points of identification. In the same way as a person must provide identification for a mobile phone account or to buy a mobile SIM card, suggests the report. It goes on to say that social media platforms, quote, must provide those identifying details when requested by law enforcement or as directed by the court. They're the partners. That's where the corporate government partnership comes in. Normal people, as Zero Hedge pointed out in this article, had some express their disbelief over this. One of them said, are we turning into North Korea? Yes, quite frankly. That is the model. This is Orwellian. I'm a social media manager, and I honestly don't get enough out of social media to justify giving them access to my ID, wrote another person. Emily van der Nagel is a lecturer at Monash University in Melbourne, Australia. She wrote her PhD thesis on the value of social media anonymity and pseudonymity. Said of the recommendation, don't do this. She said, quote, hello, it's me, a social media researcher, who has argued time and time again that it's not a good idea to force people to submit ID to use social media. It won't solve harassment. It will only further harm to already vulnerable groups. And so the hashtag Soviet Scott, the premier there, is trending, as you would hope and expect. Let me tell you, this whole thing was modeled for us, in my opinion. Go back to the 90s when they laid the foundation for all this stuff. That's when they started InQtel coming out openly using their venture capital firm, the CIA, to fund startups that would then compete with each other because they wanted to have a vibrant competition like they do in all these competitions to create killer robots or self-driving cars or whatever. They want to have multiple people competing against each other, but they fund them. And there's a big prize at the end of all this for the winner. And so they did that openly with InQtel and with many other venture capital firms, some of them that were a mixture of independent people and government money and government representatives of the intelligence community sitting on their venture capital boards. But at the same time in the 90s, they were preparing us as well. I think when you go back and you look at these reality TV shows where there was this creepy thing, I've never watched one actually, but I know a great deal of them. But the first one of those is called Big Brother, because they were modeling this for everybody, that you would show what your life is, and for that, you would become a little celebrity. And that's the whole model for social media. How many followers do you have? How many retweets did you get on that particular thing? That is the whole model. And so they put that out there. They called it Big Brother, and you have all of these combination exhibitionist, voyeur programs, these so-called reality programs, people who are just, there's nothing extraordinary about them, but they become little mini celebrities because they expose everything in their lives, literally. And so people want to do that on social media. It created that demand. And I think they knew exactly what they were doing when they called it Big Brother. I think that was deliberate revelation and enticement for a young generation to do that. Sweden's chief epidemiologist, Tegnell, warned last year that mask wearing was dangerous because it lends a false sense of security. A trusted official, ex-Army surgical technician and biologist, J.H. Capron, also suggested in 2020 that masks may be contributing to the spread of COVID, harboring germs and bacteria like facial Petri dishes. But now it's theorized that they may also have a chemical threat as well. And this is over and above the graphene. Remember that? You know, they're putting graphene in, nanoparticles, to help to disinfect these masks. They've done that to clothing quite a bit, T-shirts and things like that. They put in some nanotech particles to make sure that these things breathe. And yet they, I don't think they ever expected that you're going to put that over your face and start breathing it in. Turns out that some of the graphene particles are coming out. They're very alarmed about that, especially being used for children. Oh, yeah, just starve them of oxygen. Don't have them breathe in graphene. But graphene was one part of it, but they go beyond this. They say many of these face masks are made out of polyester, so you have a microplastic problem as well. Many of the face masks would contain polyester with chlorine compounds. If I have the mask in front of my face, then, of course, I inhale the microplastic directly, and these substances are much more toxic than if you swallow them as they get directly into the nervous system when you breathe them in. There's also reports of toxic mold and fungi and bacteria, significant threat to the immune system, potentially weakening it. People are breathing in synthetic fibers in the face masks. This is a serious concern. Loose particulates were seen on each type of mask. Also, tight and loose fibers were seen on each type of mask. If every foreign particle and every fiber and every face mask is always secure and not detachable by airflow, then there should be no risk of inhalation of such particles and fibers. However, that's not the case. Even if a small portion of the mask fibers are detachable by inspiratory airflow, or if there is debris in the manufacture of the mask or the packaging or handling of the mask, then there's a possibility not only the entry of foreign material into the airway, but also entry into the deep lung tissue and potential pathological consequences of foreign bodies in the lungs. Why aren't we concerned about this? I mean, look at how concerned everybody was, and rightfully so, over things like asbestos. In a room. And, you know, you have people like Steve McQueen died from that type of thing. So we're very concerned about that, and we should be. But we're not concerned about putting this stuff directly over our face. Yeah, it's not as harmful as asbestos, but it is much, much closer proximity for a very, very long time. And that makes it a far more dangerous thing. It's kind of like the 5G stuff, right? It's not as strong or the same frequency as a microwave, but that comes with its own problems as well. So let's take a look, before we run out of time, at some of the vaccine information that has come out. And I love this headline from RT. Look at my morally righteous shot in the arm. That's what I was just talking about with social media. This is part of it. They now have celebrities posting vaccine selfies. The author of this, Micah Curtis, says this is silly and infantile. And it is. And that's why people like Brian Stelter at CNN are doing it, because Brian Stelter is silly and infantile. Colon cancer, he says, is a very serious health worry for many Americans. Exactly how many people are asking for a colonoscopy selfie? I don't want to see that. Please, let's not make this a trend. How about chemotherapy selfies? How about tetanus shot selfies? Nobody's asking for these things because it'd be stupid. So exactly why am I seeing CNN devoting a segment of their news to how bad it is that Fox News anchors are not taking vaccination selfies? I'm more than happy to admit that we live in one of the most self-centered times in human existence. And again, this goes back to Big Brother reality TV, grooming us for social media, which was really Big Brother for each and every one of us. You know, hey, look, this is what I'm doing now. And allows Big Brother, the real Big Brother, to know everything that you're doing right now. I don't know how many people are under the assumption that folks won't be getting the vaccine. And so this guy then starts to talk about, the vaccine is so wonderful, we would all want it, even if we didn't have this kind of stuff being put out there. Fauci now telling us, when he was asked, and this is a disgustingly groveling host, I'd never seen him before, somebody named Mehdi Hasan, and he spends the first 30 seconds of this interview just groveling before His Majesty Fauci about all of his credentials and how long he's been there and everything, and then finally brings himself, after all of this worship, to ask him a question about whether or not we can eat or drink indoors if we're vaccinated. Here's Fauci.
Tonight to both vaccinated and unvaccinated Americans as to what they should and should not be doing right now. For example, eating and drinking indoors in restaurants and bars. Is that okay now?
No, it's still not okay for the simple reason that the level of infection, the dynamics of infection in the community are still really disturbingly high. Like just yesterday, there were close to 80,000 new infections, and we've been hanging around 60, 70, 75,000. So if you're not vaccinated, please get vaccinated as soon as vaccine becomes available to you. And if you are vaccinated, please remember that you still have to be careful and not get involved in crowded situations, particularly indoors where people are not wearing masks. And for the time being, until we show definitively that a person who's vaccinated does not get the subclinical infection and can spread to others, you should also continue to wear a mask for the time being.
And on the subject of herd immunity, you talked about, you know, wear your masks, even if you're vaccinated. Don't just pretend life is back to normal. It's not yet, clearly. Do you have a date in mind for when we get to herd immunity? How will we know when we've reached it? Will you or President Biden just announce it one morning from White House podium?
Yeah. Well, it's not going to be that simple. I really believe that herd immunity with regard to COVID-19 is a little bit of an elusive concept because we don't know.
It's an elusive concept? We don't know? You mean he's not going to hold a press conference and get up on his holy podium and pronounce us free? Oh, you know that's never going to happen. Yeah, not until this guy is dead and buried. And then, of course, he'll be replaced by somebody else just like him. I thought it was kind of interesting when he said, we don't know about this because we have to show this definitively as to whether or not this stuff works. How long have they been telling you that it's 100% effective? And I mean 100% effective. Come on. They're now coming out and they talk about the breakthrough stuff. Well, you know, no vaccine, says Fauci. No vaccines are 100% effective. You told us from the very beginning, remember, we had the election on Tuesday. Then we had Biden coronated on Saturday by the media. Sunday, 60 Minutes had already lined up their Operation Warp Speed. Oh, look at this. We've got people in uniforms delivering this. Isn't this amazing? You know, this is a militarized rollout of this vaccine. This is great. And we're ready to go, said the military man in charge of it. We're ready to go. As soon as we get the okay, we're going to have this on everything right away, delivered immediately. And the very next day, on Monday, so 60 Minutes is on Sunday. Biden is coronated on Saturday, 60 Minutes on Sunday. On Monday, Pfizer comes out and says, yeah, we've had this data for a while, you know, because we only did maybe 2 months, if that much, of a test. Normally they do 2 years. And they don't challenge anybody with it. It's supposed to be a long-term epidemiological study for a vaccine. That's why it's ludicrous to think that any of this stuff has been tested. And now we're seeing the results of that. But they came out on Monday and said, we're 90% effective. And then you had Russia on Tuesday, we're 93% effective. The following Monday, Moderna came out and said, we are 94% effective. And then Pfizer said, we're 94.5% effective. So they've been telling us how effective they are, and yet Fauci's saying, well, we got to show this definitively. We don't have the numbers. I don't know. What are they going to do? Are they going to do a test or something? Will they actually do a test? No, they're not. So now he tells us that they're not 100% effective. So let's talk about what has happened here with this Johnson & Johnson vaccine. New Jersey man is in the hospital just 5 weeks after being vaccinated. Francisco Cosme, 52, ecstatic when he booked an appointment for the one-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine at the Javits Center on March the 6th. He was vaccinated, and he continued to wear his mask because he's one of these people scared to death, and to follow all the social distancing guidelines. But he became, quote, very confused and began doing things that were not normal. April the 1st was the very first day he started to have symptoms, said his daughter. He had a cough, fever, chills, everything. So the 31-year-old daughter drove the 52-year-old father to the hospital. His condition worsened, they put him on oxygen. The ambulance crew that took him in he's now in critical condition being treated for pneumonia. Now, this is where the tragedy gets very interesting from a vaccination standpoint. She told the Post that her mother, husband, and children ended up all testing positive for COVID and are now in quarantine until next Sunday. We survived the whole year without the vaccine, doing all the things that we were supposed to do, social distancing, washing hands, masking up. None of us in the family got sick. The father took the vaccine because he was eligible because of his age. He's the only one who got vaccinated. But after a year, he gets deathly sick. He's now in critical condition in the hospital. And everybody else in the family now has COVID after the vaccine. Do you find that interesting? I do. I do. And so in that context, we see a epidemic of what Fauci and these other liars are calling breakthrough cases. We got breakthrough cases coming out here. They're coming out of everywhere. The rare cases of breakthrough infections have been reported in multiple states. Let me give you an example of this. In Oregon, 168 breakthrough cases. These cases have been reported in 25 counties and in all healthcare preparedness regions of Oregon. This is an alert, April the 8th. Vaccine breakthrough cases are defined as test results at least 14 days after the final dose of a COVID vaccine. So 2 weeks after you've had it, just enough time for it to produce the disease in you and to make you contagious to everybody else in your family, even though nobody had it for the entire year. In Michigan, we got 246 breakthrough cases here. In Clark County, Nevada. Nevada has 58 breakthrough cases. Most of them are in Clark County because that's where virtually the entire population of Las Vegas is, in Clark County. And so 35 of the 58 cases are in Clark County. But yeah, they've got the breakthrough cases as well. So the New Yorker magazine, guy writes about his own personal experience, about how they were very careful. They'd done everything. They were good little obedient Fauci citizens. They followed all of his regulations and rituals, then they got the vaccine, and then he wrote about the mystery of breakthrough cases. So this is no mystery to me. I think we understand what's going on. He said, after he got the vaccine, I'm starting to get sick. I read an article, don't be surprised when vaccinated people get infected, but of course I thought this was an article about other people. And so he said, we went to a rapid PCR testing site. The next day, the regular PCR test came back positive. So he had submitted a PCR test. It was going to take too long, so he couldn't wait. So he rode his bicycle. That's the kind of guy he is. Rode his bicycle. Good leftist. Wants to support the environment. He wants to do everything they tell him. So he rides his bicycle. Even though he thinks he's coming down, he's very sick with this, he goes and gets another PCR test. I'm sure he probably wore his mask while he was riding his bicycle as well. And so he said, the problem is, he said, a breakthrough infection disturbs your narrative imagination. Yes, it does. It does shatter the illusion that's been sold to people by Fauci, doesn't it? This illusion, he says that, quote, by the summer, you'll be on the beach in the UK. By September, we'll be back on the campus. It's kind of muddied that. That's what happens when you lie to people. A healthy 27-year-old Chicago doctor now dead 3 months following COVID shots, raising long-term safety concerns. And, I mean, this guy is in great shape. I mean, this is what he looks like. 27 years old, worked out quite a bit, very athletic. Unfortunately, they said he had absolutely no indications of any disease. He was athletically active right up to the day before he died. He got the Pfizer experimental vaccine jab. I don't know. I mean, we've had all these different cases of blood clot issues, strokes, myocarditis, inflammation of the heart, a lot of different things like that. He had tweeted out on social media, honored to be a part of administering the second dose of the Pfizer vaccine to the first five recipients in Chicago. They put him at the front of the line as a healthcare worker. January the 6th, dead by April the 3rd. A doctor, 56-year-old doctor, who had no health issues whatsoever. No medical certainty, they say, as he dies. Again, these people are coincidence theorists. It's just a coincidence. Just a coincidence. 15 days prior to his death, this 56-year-old Florida doctor, Dr. Gregory Michael, developed the first signs of an immune autoimmune blood disorder. Where have we seen that before? With excessive bleeding. 3 days after receiving his first dose of the vaccine, he died from a brain hemorrage after a team of doctors was unable to control his bleeding. He was in very good health. He didn't smoke. He drank alcohol once in a while, but only socially. He worked out, kayaking, deep sea fishing. We tested him for everything that you can imagine, even cancer. There was absolutely nothing else wrong with him, said one of the doctors. A Johns Hopkins University scientist agreed, told the New York Times he believed that it was a medical certainty that the vaccine caused his death. They said Dr. Jerry L. Spivak, an expert on blood disorders at Johns Hopkins University, not involved in his care, but said that the description, I think it is a medical certainty that the vaccine was related. But don't worry, it's going to be very rare, very rare. It happened, and it could happen again, but you need to take your vaccine. Always the case. Even another person, a hematologist, Professor Emeritus, who's written more than 300 scientific articles on platelet disorder, told the Times he believes it was possible the cases were linked to the vaccine. Now, see, if you think that, you're a conspiracy theorist, says the coincidence theorists. Fortunately, the AstraZeneca child vaccine has been halted, the tests that were going to be done in Australia, because of the knowledge of the blood clots. As Children's Health Defense, RFK Jr.'s organization, points out, Johnson & Johnson has had a very bad month. Here's five things that have happened. Number one, the vaccination sites that we saw shut down in four states after more than 45 people suffered immediate adverse reactions. But, of course, there's nothing to see there either. It was, I don't know, the heat in Colorado, or maybe it was fear of the needle that caused them to pass out. Reports of COVID and people fully vaccinated with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine continue to mount. Number three, U.S. and European regulators are reviewing cases of blood clots in people who got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So it's the FDA as well as Europe. You know that this is bad if the FDA is investigating a pharmaceutical company. It's a done deal at that point, because they do everything they can to look the other way. Number four, Johnson & Johnson vaccine output dropped by 85% after 15 million doses were contaminated with AstraZeneca ingredients. And finally, number five, critics take shots at Johnson & Johnson and their role in the opioid epidemic after they paid their CEO $30 million bonus and paid out billions of dollars in fines for the opioid epidemic. If there was any justice, they would have been shut down. They would have had what they did with the opioid epidemic. They would have had all their stuff given the El Chapo treatment. Confiscate everything without due process or trial or conviction. If we're going to play that war on drugs thing, I mean, they were the ones who were the actual manufacturers for what was being distributed by the Sackler family. It was actually Johnson & Johnson making that. And, of course, this isn't their first rodeo. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back with Goat Tree, and we're going to talk about all things cyber attacks. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
The COVID-19 pandemic has shaken our economies and societies to the core and shown us how vulnerable we are to biological threats. In the digital world, similar risks are being overlooked right now. A cyber attack with COVID-like characteristics would spread faster and further than any biological virus. Its reproductive rate would be around 10 times greater than what we've experienced with the coronavirus. To give you an idea, one of the fastest worms in history, the 2003 Slammer Sapphire Worm, doubled in size approximately every 8.5 seconds, infecting over 75,000 devices in 10 minutes and almost 11 million devices in 24 hours. Fortunately, at least until now, cyber attacks have not impacted our health the way pandemics have, but the economic damages, and therefore the impact they have had on our daily lives, have been equal and sometimes even greater. You see, the only way to stop the exponential propagation of a COVID-like cyber threat is to fully disconnect the millions of vulnerable devices from one another and from the internet. All of this in a matter of days. A single day without the internet would cost our economies more than $50 billion, and that's before considering the economic and societal damages should these devices be linked to essential services such as transport or healthcare. As the digital realm increasingly merges with our physical world, the ripple effects of cyber attacks on our safety just keep on expanding at a faster pace than what we're preparing for. COVID-19 was known as an anticipated risk. So is the digital equivalent. Let's be better prepared for that one. The time is now.
All right, welcome back. And as we're now on day 395 of lockdown, it was probably about 425 or 30 days ago that I did the story about the bracelets based on your being tested and, of course, eventually on your being vaccinated. But initially, it would be on a daily test, and you would get tested, and then you would get the bracelet permission. And, of course, the person who told that to me was not somebody who was in the business of making wrist bracelets. He was somebody who works in cybersecurity. That's our guest now, GoatTree. And he gave that information to me. It's proved to be very accurate. We know that this is where this is all going. The vaccine passports, we now see this with Excelsior in New York. Get your test within 72 hours, and you can get packed into Madison Square Garden, but you can't get it too early. It's got to be within that window of 72 hours, and if it's in that window of 72 hours, they'll give you permission. Or if you get vaccinated, we can make all this stuff go away. So I want to talk to GoatTree about how they're rolling out this Pentagon microchip, and we're starting to see nanotechnology incorporated into this surveillance stuff in terms of these body implants, both the Neuralink that was done by Elon Musk, and now in what is being proposed by the Pentagon. To put a microchip in your body to right underneath your skin to constantly do tests and to tell you if you're going to be sick. So they can do pre-sickness quarantine, if you will. So joining us now is GoatTree. Thank you for joining us, GoatTree.
Hey, good morning, David.
Morning.
Let's get you a Pulitzer Prize this morning.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. I'll let you start out where you want to start out. What, out of all these different things I've talked about, I listed out these things this morning. We'll talk about deep dot web, cyber polygon from DARPA. Just played from Davos. I just played that. The DARPA implants, the Neuralink implants from Elon Musk, electroceuticals. It's like these people want to get in our bodies, isn't it?
Sure. If you've got a month, we can cover it all.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, they've gotten under my skin this last year with all of their rules, but they literally want to get under my skin.
Yeah, I was sitting here thinking while I was waiting. You remember when I gave you the Dark Winter program? That was,
yeah.
I think you went public with it. What in?
Well, Dark Winter Two.
January the 3rd.
Yeah, Dark Winter Two.
2 years ahead of time.
Yeah.
And this stuff, we're months or years ahead of what's going on. So yep. It sounds like the rants of a crazy person when I start telling y'all what's going to go on and what to expect. I would really love to be wrong. Sometimes in my world, the best thing is to be wrong. I mean, I celebrate when I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But the bottom line to all this is Silicon Valley really does not care about your security.
That's right.
I want to emphasize this. Everybody, write this in stone. Silicon Valley does not care about your security. Please, everything that follows, keep this in mind. This is the bottom line to it all. They do not care about your security.
Right.
They only care about their proprietary security. And if they get the chance to sell you some marginally functional security solutions. Basically, you're on your own when you're with your own digital security.
Right. As Naomi Wolf said, we've unleashed a lot of very dark forces. And boy, when I think about that, the first thing that comes to mind is DARPA and the partnership that they have with Silicon Valley. I mean, these people have a dark agenda, and we should never trust them.
And I'm going to roll some dark agenda out to you guys for everyday use.
Okay.
Here we go. Do you remember back in 18, that Man in Black terrorist team that shot up San Bernardino? I think it was a Christmas party.
Yeah.
They killed like 20 or 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
The officials made this big deal about cracking their cell phones. They couldn't get into their iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I'm going to teach y'all how to do that. It's a lot easier than you think. And the reason I'm doing this is it goes back to Silicon Valley does not care about your security. The reason this sticks out in my memory, I contacted the lead investigators, and I told them, I said, $500,000, I'll have a full access to that phone in less than a minute. This is what I'm going to teach y'all. The lead investigator, of course, Apple, if they're listening, they're probably screaming no right now, but all the smartphone makers are. Well, the lead investigators, they said no, and they handed it off to a high-tech Israeli lab who did it, I think, for $1.5-2 million. And I'm going to use this as an example why Silicon Valley does not care about our security. Okay, on all these cell phones, if you have I'm going to use an iPhone as an example. On the right side, about three-quarters of the way down, you will find a small tray that looks like a CD tray. That's where your SIM card is.
Mm-hmm.
You'll notice there's a little dimple in it. You could take a safety pin, a paper clip, a sharp ballpoint pen, whatever, and pop it open. You swap out SIM cards. Well, on the second iPhone, you would have to turn it off. Take the SIM card out of iPhone 1, which is yours, the controller. Open up the SIM card on phone 2. Pop it open. Put your SIM card in it. Turn the phone back on, and it will boot up. And whatever information is on that iPhone, you have access to.
Mm-hmm.
It's that easy.
Yeah. Yeah,
you think Apple really cares about your security?
Yeah, it sounds really secure. Swap out the SIM card. Yeah, that's great.
So remember, Karen, when David's asleep, if you wonder what he's up to, now you know how to hack his iPhone.
That's right. Yeah, just get her hair clip, and she's got my whole history.
Yeah. You know, she could even post crazy things on Twitter for you. Like you don't do enough of that. Well, but I want to segue that into these vaccine passports and getting chipped and all this.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, technologically, we're at the point of dog chips, you know, where you take the dog to the vet, get him chipped. They put your information on the dog, so if the dog ever gets lost, they can bring him home. They're trying to dog chip people right now.
Yeah.
These are basically RFID chips. You wave the wand over it and retrieve the information, or you get close enough to the input device, they can input the information. What they've got in mind right now is, this is the starting point. As it goes on, they plan on adding modules to it, piggybacking all sorts of ancillary modules. Well, it's no big deal. Put your driver's license on there. A little bit of tweaking. You can put credit card, cryptocurrency, your car keys, whatever you want on that chip.
Yes.
What you've got to do is wave whatever body part you have it installed in front of the RFID reader. And it'll perform whatever functions requested. Well, once again, you being an engineer, all we've got to do is ask what can possibly go wrong, right?
That's right. That's right.
This is not rocket science. You can have anyone out there go on the internet and shop around for RFID tools. Whatever you're trying to do with that chip. You want to put input data? You could prank people really good with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I could, if I got close enough to you, I could change your identity. Once again, like I said, that's hackers, we rule. I don't really hack, but if I was, it's all about the information.
Right.
Coming back to the security issue, like cell phones, Silicon Valley really doesn't care about your security. When you get chipped, you'll have your own account, your own password. You think you're secure. You can make it whatever as complicated as you want. That's your account and your password. But here's where it gets interesting. The back doors.
Yes. That's right.
Silicon Valley, whoever the manufacturer is, will give you a generic password. And it'll be something simple like admin 123, password 123, whatever. Same as what they did with SolarWind.
Mm-hmm.
You think about that.
Yeah.
So you can make as complicated of a password as you want for your own individual use, but that access point is going to have less than 10 passwords in existence. And there'll be something simple and generic. You know, there's 6 billion people in the world. 6 billion people need to be chipped.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine trying to generate 6 billion unique passwords for them? And then building the file system that contains all this individual unique passwords and information. They won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't care about your security. They simply care about this data and the control of it.
That's right. And, of course, as you pointed out with the SolarWinds hack, we have these backdoors, and you have backdoors for developers. You have backdoors for tech support. You have backdoors for the owners who buy that software, so they'll be able to get in and have some control there. And, of course, there's backdoors that are always set up for the government, and this was one of the reasons I've mentioned this many times, why we should never trust any electronic voting machine. These people who are talking about the Dominion thing, they don't even get what's going on. And, of course, the SolarWinds thing is continually sold to people as if it were a hack. But it was about the back door, as you pointed out. That's why they did the raid on the software developers. They would not have raided the software developers here in Austin if it had been an external hack. But they were concerned because there was a universal back door that they'd put there. That was the difference. Usually you don't see, you don't have one back door to rule them all. They were very careless with their back doors.
Exactly. But you've got to think back. Remember when, I think it was Snowden, put out the Stellar Winds?
Yeah.
He was telling everybody back in 2014 before he had to flee to Russia. This is what these guys are doing. Well, a little bit of wordplay, and you've got SolarWinds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
But
So when you look at this, you know, GoTree, when they're talking about this cyber polygon, that's got a lot of people's attention now because, again, we've seen how, and you mentioned, you know, 2 years ago you contacted me or more, it's more than 2 years, talking about how there was a lot of chatter about a Dark Winter 2. And they've been wargaming and practicing this stuff on an annual basis since the first Dark Winter, which was just a couple of months before 9/11. This is the end of June, beginning of July. They modeled all this stuff, the first simulation with Johns Hopkins and the CDC and these other people. So they modeled it. Then they had a false flag right after the week after 9/11. And then within another month or two, they had Model State Health Emergency Powers Act that they pushed out to everybody to tell them enact this. But then for 20 years... actually 19, I guess, they modeled this, the last one being Event 201 that everybody's heard about, and then they had Cladex, but they had one every year. And they were training the people who were going to implement this, the bureaucrats, and they were practicing, I think, their deception, right, as how they're going to deceive everybody. You know, they had the whole thing scripted out. They had media people. It's like, well, this is what we tell people about our fake pandemic. But they had this whole thing war game. So when people see this cyber polygon thing, they say, yeah, this is going to be like what just happened to us. It just happened, right? What just happened to us, this could happen again, and it'd be much more severe. And that is exactly, a lot of people are concerned about this, but it's been going on for quite some time.
The plans. Well, I think the second phase, that's where it's going to get, you know, I'm sitting here debating if I should throw this out. Mm-hmm. The best case scenario is I'm wrong and make them pivot off this nonsense. I guess worst case scenario, we have black helicopters flying mm-hmm. over the house.
Mm-hmm.
But they have this green agenda. Now, how would you merge the green agenda mm-hmm. with the pandemics?
Right.
The tundra is thawing out. They're unearthing all these 10,000, 50,000-year-old mammoths and these other animals that have been frozen forever. Then they looked, well-preserved. They're thawing them out, and they're playing with them. There's actually people that they're unearthing that froze to death thousands of years ago. It's all due to the tundra thawing out. Well, it's only natural that they're going to thaw out something that's going to bring on a virus, a pandemic like the world's never seen before.
Yeah. I think one of the things that came out in all this, GoTree, looking at the details of what DARPA was talking about, they said, by the way, we have gone through hundreds of tissue samples from soldiers and sailors infected with pathogens all over the world, including the 1918 Spanish flu. This is the gold standard of all their pandemics. They always want to point back to the 1918 flu. So DARPA is out there getting the 1918 flu. We know that what they specialize in is gain of function. That should mm-hmm. Get everybody afraid about what these people are really up to.
Well, I don't know about you. I'm a little more concerned about the pneumonic plague or something like that. That seemed to be a lot more radical, but yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, whatever they get, they're going to weaponize it. You know, I mean, they brought in Burkholderia pseudomallei in the Tulane lab. That had a fatality rate after it took hold of 45%, but that wasn't good enough for them. They brought it in to do gain of function. Want to make it easier, more easily spread, more fatal. But as we look at this, whatever they do, whether it is real or imagined, GoTree, the central thing about this is the digital identity scheme. It always comes back to that. And at Davos last year in July when they did their Cyber Polygon 2020, that was what Tony Blair was pushing. Digital ID for me is a very big part of the future, to keep a record of everything that you do online, what you share on social media, the websites you visit, your smartphones, geolocation, all the credentials that we normally have. In other words, full-on, total Big Brother surveillance of everything and making that your passport to do everything. I mean, that is the goal of where they want to go with all this. It's the holy grail that they're pursuing.
Yes. The you know, I hate to be so sarcastic about it, but the dog chip you're getting is simply a temporary platform for them to build off of.
Mm-hmm.
They have some setbacks right now with the nanotech. They're trying to penetrate this blood-brain barrier, and I don't understand a lot of the details of this medical aspect, but they have hit the wall with the blood-brain connectivity, and they're trying to use silver and gold isotopes to breach it. There's medical people that understand that far more than I do.
Well, I imagine their desire to get past the blood-brain barrier would be the ability to introduce things intravenously and then get into the brain, because, you know, it's kind of obvious that they've done something to you if they put you on the surgical table and you come out with electrodes sticking out of your head, right? Or you might have a big shaved spot on the back of your head. What's that? Because when we saw what happened with Elon Musk and Neuralink and this chimp that they had out there playing video games, as everybody was pointing out, there really wasn't anything new about that. We've seen that for a couple of decades. They've been doing these types of experiments. What was different about this particular one? Two things. Number one, it was wireless instead of having the big electrodes connected to a machine. And number two was the advance in the nanotech. So it wasn't a scientific breakthrough. It was an engineering breakthrough to reduce the technology to collect. They said it had 1,000 different connection points for his monitoring neural activity. It concentrated all that, had some internal processing, and then wirelessly connected that back to with Bluetooth, and to shrink all that technology and to put it in there and to have it operate wirelessly. That was the engineering accomplishment that they had.
Yes, you've got Dr. Fauci and Stan. You've got these electrodes and whatnot sticking out. I'm thinking people won't go that path. But, you know, under this DARPA Brain Initiative, that's what they call it, they have these brain chips and things like that ready to go. They just have no connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
And back to the dog chip, they have to use Wi-Fi. And you remember the old TV show, My Favorite Martian, where he'd raise his antennas?
Yeah, I'm of the same age, yeah. He's got the antennas that come out of his head, right? You just won't see those antennas.
Yeah, well, okay, you're connected. They've experimented with these tattoos, these connected tattoos, and those went horribly wrong. But these people, they were running out and getting these connected tattoos, and they were made out of certain metal flake and a rare earth type material. And they got some very terrible results, like they were burning your flesh. And
Well, if you describe, let me interject here. You know, if you look at hip replacement issues, right? There was major issue, and I forget what the rare earth metal was that was involved, but they came up with these mechanical hip replacements, and this is very low tech. I mean, they're just coming up with something that they thought would be very, very durable, with the kind of constant grinding that you get from walking. And so they put that particular prosthetic in. And unfortunately, there were very, very microscopic, super microscopic amounts of that worn off with the general use. And even though it was such a small amount, that particular metal created all kinds of health issues for people who had it. And it was a major recall, major lawsuits involved in that. It's one of the reasons why, you know, the vaccine stuff, it doesn't take very much of something that is a foreign introduction of a foreign material in to really wreck your health completely. And that's what we saw in the hip implants. So, of course, if they start experimenting with this stuff with electronic implants, it's going to have that type of issue as well. Not to mention the electrical signals and how that's going to interfere with you biologically as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's unintended consequences by the thousands here. But the bottom line is Silicon Valley really does not care about your security. So you're getting this implanted. I showed you how to hack your iPhone.
Yeah.
Well, this is implanted. I mean, this is now part of you unless you cut it out.
Yeah.
They've been microchipping people for a very long time. I mean, there was military that are microchipped. I mean, I don't know if people want to expose that. But this has been ongoing. Mm-hmm. And they found out, they tried some of these microchips in glass, which were very low connectivity. How are you going to encapsulate these microchips?
I don't know.
Going back to your...
How they do it?
Well, I don't know. This is...
Well, DARPA is saying that they've got some kind of a vial of green tissue-like gel. Well, there you go. That's pretty specific. Frankenstein technology here. Yeah, it's like green gel like Frankenstein. No problem. Yeah, go ahead and put that under my skin. I got no problem with that. And I tell you, there'd be a lot of people who don't have a problem with that. And they're going to be the people who are going to be working for the government, and they're not going to have any problem doing all kinds of stuff to you either.
No. They're the ones, as you were saying, in the Big Brother house. They're the cool, hip people. Hey, yeah. Look at this. I can wave my hand around and pay for my latte.
Yeah.
You know, you get pulled over by the cop, wave your hand around for a scanner, and he can tell if you're legal or not.
That's right.
Well, once again, this is so low-tech. I'm a...
Well, you know the thing about this that surprises me so much, Gautree, is just how transparent this is. I think it's just blatantly transparent. And a lot of people see this. And, of course, that's why YouTube has got to do its censorship. But the idea that they're absolutely obsessed on an ID. And that's what this has all been from the very beginning. Yesterday I talked about how this whole thing was like ransomware. We're going to lock you down. And then your key to get out of this is going to be taking our vaccine and our identification stuff. And, oh, guess what? Just like these pirates who take over your machine, they're not going to let you go after that either. And so they're coming always for complete surveillance and tracking of everything that you do, and then telling us that the biggest threat, even as they're talking about cybersecurity threats, they say the biggest threat to everything is fake news. That's an existential threat to everything that we do. So it tells you that they're liars.
Oh, yeah.
It tells you that they're liars. They're admitting that they're liars because they've got to shut down information. Fake news is a digital pandemic, and the citizens are incapable of thinking critically. So we have to be protected by the likes of Vladimir Posner. I remember when this guy was working for the Soviet Union as a propagandist. So they put Vladimir Posner and some BBC. The BBC is like the British version of Pravda. They put these two people together in the cyber polygon last year to tell everybody, oh, no, you know, people are stupid, and we have to protect them from misinformation. We have to be the gatekeepers and protect them, and so we will decide what is true and what isn't.
You know what would really be interesting? When Nancy Pelosi retires, her and Ozzy Osbourne team up and do the information talk show on all this high-tech stuff. That would make about as much sense as BBC and their pundits.
Oh, yeah.
Because these people are, you say herd immunity. I call it hurt immunity.
Yeah.
They're hurting a bunch of people.
Yeah.
I mean, you have people volunteering to be lab rats right now and taking these vaccines.
Yes.
I mean,
and for nothing.
Come on,
they're not
people.
Getting paid anything, and they're not offering any, not offered anything at the end. It's like, well, you're still going to have to do all the Fauci rituals, and oh, we're not paying you either. Just go ahead and become a test subject. And they're eager to get it. They're fighting each other, if you can believe their narratives. And I believe some of these people are so excited that they can get this thing because they've been told by the media how rare this is. This is like collecting Pokemon cards. I remember when they pulled that scam on my sons when they were young. Oh, the Pokemon cards, they're very, very rare. And so they're like trying to get these Pokemon cards. But this is what they're doing to these grown adults now.
Yeah. You've got the special Pokemon implanted devices.
Yeah.
But, you know, you hit upon this ransomware. Do you realize this can be fixed for no money? It's freeware. I was reading where there is going to be projected $1 trillion, that's with a T, dollars of ransomware damage done this year.
Wow.
I'm going to say it very carefully and very slowly so that your people, your listeners, can go get this program.
Oh,
but they're
good.
Going to have to learn some programming. This stuff isn't easy. But it's for your own good and your own protection. There's a program called CUBES. Q-U-B-E-S. Put it on any search engine and it'll take you there. This compartmentalizes your data. So all your email, put it in one of the compartments. Mm. If you get ransomware, it is simply going to do whatever to that one compartment. You can hit click, delete, boom, it's gone.
Ah.
Set up another compartment with your email, you're back in business.
That's great.
That is how simple this is. And everybody's running around hysterical. $1 trillion worth of damage.
Yeah, yeah. So what is the programming involved with this? This is not an app? You have to customize it or something, Cubes?
Yeah, you're going to have to modify it to the way that you want. For instance, some people keep their work documents in one compartment, their personal documents in another compartment. You can make dozens of compartments. One compartment for photos and things that, you know, you consider valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Like me, I go out hunting for the nasties. I use cubes and I use some other devices. Or if I catch one, I try to sandbox it and reverse engineer it. And this stuff is easy.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
My email.
I've known people, as a matter of fact, there was a church I went to where they got hit with ransomware and they had to get everybody's data again because it completely took over their, they didn't pay the ransom and they lost all the data that they had on members' contact information, that type of thing. So it wasn't a big loss, but, you know, that's the one exposure that I've had to it indirectly.
Well, they don't want you to know this. I mean, Listen, Silicon Valley wants to create these problems. Once again, they don't care about your security. They can sell you the solutions to it.
I've always suspected that Microsoft, which was always notorious for being the most vulnerable to any of these viruses, always suspected that that was a deliberate thing because Gates has always been so connected to the government and to the Pentagon.
Don't get me started on that.
Okay, go ahead. Get started on it. Go ahead. What do you think?
let's go to Y2K, for example. Oh, the Earth, you know, the world's coming to an end on 2000.
Yeah, yeah.
I was running a public company back then, and we had the SEC demanding that we submit all these reports. How are we going to handle Y2K? And it was crazy. I mean, it was like, well, we're not. We're just going to watch the world burn. You'll never know because it sounds like we're all going to be dead by 1202. Well, here we are. Same with the pandemic. I mean, how many times has Gates done this?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I forget the guy that actually developed the DOS back in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had access to this DOS. Microsoft DOS. We used to call it dirty operating system.
Was dirty how he got it. I mean, he stole that from Digital Research. I mean, it was just blatant. They didn't even bother to change the names. They still called it BIOS. The interface was still the same. Everything was the same. He just ripped it off and got away with it because he was lawyered up.
Yeah, and the big scam that nobody wants to admit to, I was working for Compaq at the time. You know, Compaq computers, the PCs and luggable computers. They call them portable, whatever.
Luggables.
We were developing our own DOS platform. But my favorite was absolutely, it was bulletproof, believe it or not, was Tandy, Radio Shack.
Hmm.
Their DOS program at the time was absolutely flawless. We looked at other operating systems. I believe it was Atari. Atari was bulletproof.
Hmm.
And in August 1983, everybody can look this up and read it, NIST issued their Orange Book. And that Orange Book was National Security, I forget the official title, but it had to do with data security. And they handed the keys to the kingdom over to IBM and Microsoft.
Yeah.
Then Gates came for everybody, the lawyers, all this.
And look at who is at the epicenter of all this stuff, pushing all this stuff. You got IBM putting together this Excelsior system for New York State. You have Microsoft at the center of this CCPA, you know, or C2PA, they call it, where they're pulling together the hardware manufacturers, the software producers, and creating an ID for everything that you create that'll track you so they can look for that ID and shut down anything that's coming from David Knight, for example.
Right. And all these backdoors, all these flaws, all these conflicts. And then they pushed for the plug-in and play aspect of these computers. Yes, it made it a lot simpler. But when you go to plug-in and play, you lose complete control of your hardware. Everything's done electronically. Gee, this is easy.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, though, you had to manually install it. As you said earlier, with the BIOS, you had to run through the BIOS to set up your configurations, and it was unpredictable. And you had a lot of hardware security and a lot more security that way than with this plug-in and play. I think that came out like in 89 or 90.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was also pushed very heavily by Silicon Valley. So, I mean, I've been at this since 1982. And they don't like for me to go to Silicon Valley. You know, the powers that be at set up on the Sand Hills Country Club, they'll start chanting Luddite, Luddite. And I just don't want it. It's like McAfee. You know, he's really popular out there if he can ever get out of jail.
yeah, he's not popular with them either. Yeah, he's throwing a lot of truth bombs at those people. You know, we take a look at what's going on with the Neuralink thing and mind control. Like I said, one of the key things about this goat tree was the fact that they had reduced the size of the technology. They were doing a great deal of computational stuff, and you know, it's a very complicated thing to look at these neurons and to try to decide what's going on, because it's not like a binary switch. It's not like they're on or off. They're always spiking, and they're spiking even when there's not any activity. When there is some activity and they're firing, firing a lot of spikes. So there's a little bit of discernment there, but it's not an easy thing to do. And they've got 1,000 different points that they somehow injected into this monkey's brain. And they've got to go through and collect all that stuff and beam that back technologically. And so that's an issue that we should be concerned about. But as you pointed out, they've had the BRAIN Initiative, and I forget what it stands for, but it's an acronym. They funded it in the Obama administration. I know there was at least one funding of $200 to $250 million just for that BRAIN Initiative, and that's just one of these initiatives. As Elon Musk is talking about this, he's talking about it in terms of a synergy between humans and machines, AI. And we know what that is. We've had Kurzweil talk about the singularity, where we have a merger of man and machine. It's transhumanism. It is cyborgs. It's all these other things. And they're making this cool, I think. This is the other part of it. The two things about this monkey demonstration are, number one, the technology reduction in size, the nanotech that's there. The second thing is the modeling of this to everybody and making it cool. Because like the vaccine, if it's cool enough, you want it. And mark my word, you're going to have a lot of people who are going to be willing to take this chip because they think it's cool and because it's going to let them do things that they couldn't do before with their mind. I mean, look at this. We're like the guy from My Favorite Martian or something, moving stuff telepathically.
Right. And the funny part about DARPA is this BRAIN Initiative came from the whole concept that they sold it for was to help people that are paralyzed, veterans that have lost limbs.
Yeah, that's right.
So they perfected that where these guys can have an artificial limb and can feel things and move things, move their fingers, and things like that. Can you imagine having a prosthetic and you can feel through it?
Yeah.
That was kiddie play.
Yeah. And, of course, there's absolutely no reason that that prosthetic needs to be connected to you, right? You could mindlessly control that wire, you know, over a long distance. It's just a technological link. But that's the thing about DARPA that is so insidious, in my opinion. You know, these killer robots are not about helping old ladies across the street. And although they might use some of this prosthetic stuff to help injured soldiers, and although they say that they want to be able, and they say they can do it, I don't know, but I don't put any of this stuff past them, that they can selectively erase memories and then selectively implant memories of things that you've never done. And they say, well, we do that to help soldiers who are suffering from PTSD. They use that as a way to wedge that in, and they will sell this technology first as a necessity to help people who have disabilities. Then they will bring it in as part of the cool stuff, and then they will mandate it.
Yes, and these dog chips we're talking about under the guise of the vaccine passport is the basic platform that they are going to start with. They will switch it out one day, but this is an advancement. Mm-hmm. And it gives them through the nanotech. It's a nanotech platform. They can keep adding modules and advancing that until one day they've got what they want. And then everybody gets cut out and replaced.
Yeah,
right. You know, this is so 2019. Come get the 2030 chip.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Or just a wireless upgrade like he does for the Tesla vehicles, right?
Absolutely.
I'm past the stage where I let people do automatic updates to my computer. I was like, no thanks. I don't even want that done to my laptop, let alone to my brain.
Well, and these people that are allowing this to happen, I mean, okay, sure. Elon, he thinks he's in control of this. Elon, I can hack your chip too, you know.
Well, you know, like, Gotree, you talk about people allowing this to happen. One of the other things that struck me when I finally did go back and watch the video, and I was going to put it in the machine so I could show people. But, you know, when you look at this chimp or whatever it is, it's not a, I don't know, whatever this monkey is that they've trained to play games. The way they trained him, Gotree, was they give him a joystick in one hand that he can play with. And then they have a rod there that he's sucking on to get his candy treat the whole time, right? And I said to Karen, I said, look at this. Is this not a metaphor for contemporary society, right? You got a little bit of a manipulation on your screen here, and you're getting a constant feedback of a little treat that is there. And so they teach him, you know, to play the game for little sugar treats, and then they deactivate the joystick, and he's able to do it with his mind. That's the trick. But to me, the thing was how they were incentivizing him and hooking him on this TV monitor. That's what they're doing to everybody, and that's a big part of why they physically locked us down this last year, to get us hooked on this monitor, this cyber reality that they want us to be in. Once they get us into that cyberspace, and that's where we're operating, they've got us under their thumb for good at that point.
Well, you were talking about social media. You get the same endorphin rush by getting a like or a retweet or whatever on Facebook or Twitter or wherever. You're like, suddenly you get the endorphin rush. Oh, someone agrees with me. I'm popular.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right.
You know, I'm somebody. Someone actually listened to me.
That's right.
So there's your sugar treat.
Oh, and that's the thing that really... You know, in my business, you really got to watch, because you get caught up in that, in the sense that, you know, this is, am I getting any engagement? Is anybody hearing this kind of stuff? And that's the fatal thing from a standpoint of taking your integrity, because then they get you trained on that. You know, here's my audience or whatever. Then that's how the people lose their credibility, because they want to maintain that audience. And after a while, they get so addicted to that, they'll say or do anything to keep their audience.
Absolutely.
That's especially true of the professionals.
This is our digital sugar treat.
Yeah.
I keep social media to a minimum. I mean, I do not. I mean, I know how the game's played. That's why, it's like, I don't really need this. I don't care if I'm popular or not. I can go in there and hack this thing, get myself a million followers.
Yeah.
If I wanted to. It was like Facebook. They finally were forced to admit last week they had a breach 500 million users' information got out. These guys don't care about your security.
No.
Can you imagine 500 million people? I mean, just visualize how many people that is.
Well, the worst thing about Facebook and all these social media things is that you're putting that information out there for anybody and everybody to scrape that up and find out everything they want to from you. And, of course, the algorithms that the government, the Pentagon have, allows them to very put together, to piece together a picture of you that is everything that they ever wanted to know. That's why they talked about having data log or life log. And then everybody said, well, that's really creepy. We don't want the government keeping that. And then as soon as the day that Zuckerberg starts Facebook, they shut down LifeLog because Facebook is LifeLog. Facebook is where you log everything about your life and where they can grab all this data, do their analysis and their data mining right off of the public space and know everything about you.
Absolutely. And they could program that into your embedded chip. If they wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is so insidious. And this is why I thought, well, okay, yesterday you were hitting home runs on these chips. I mean, you know, you really outdid yourself on it. And I hated pivoting off on what we had planned on. But look at the importance of having something surgically implanted into you and the unintended consequences.
That's right. And, I mean, and if you think these people really care about your health and they're going to help you, look at what they're doing with the vaccine implants and other things like that. Look at how they're willing to cut you off, even as we saw Goatree in the Caribbean island where they got a volcano and it's like, sorry, we're not letting you off the island unless you got a vaccine passport. I mean, these people could die from the inhalation of the volcanic ash. That's a very serious respiratory issue, but they don't care. These people are willing to let you die. So ask yourself, if you allow them to put a chip in your body that is going to be something that you need, even if you've got a disability or something, it's going to give you some additional functionality, or it's a life-supporting function because you've got something in your body that has ceased to function, and so now they've put something in there. Do you think they won't cut that off if you don't do exactly what they say? I mean, they will use that on you just like they did Snake Plissken.
Of course, and you know, the strange part about this that went on with this volcano, and people don't understand this, the silica that's being expelled comes out superheated, it turns into glass. So these people are basically inhaling glass shards.
Yes, that's right.
It's shredding their lungs. I mean, what kind of nonsense is it? Well, you don't have your vaccine passport. Well, these people, I mean, it's really terrible.
And you see governments, all these governments in surrounding islands, willing to let these people die. You see the corporations who are partnering with the governments willing to let these people die. Because the corporations, even if these cruise ships were not going to be able to unload these people, a basic human compassion should require them to put these people on their ships anyway and just keep them on and say, well, we're just going to have these, we're going to, you know, drive them around to get them off the island. Even if we can't disembark, I'm sure that we'll be able to take them off somewhere. All these nations that are opening up their borders because of the globalist agenda, saying we got to bring in refugees, but nobody wants to bring in the refugees from a volcanic explosion on an island.
Well, you just answered all the questions there about their compassion and their agendas and things like that. You're going to let a whole island of people that are unvaccinated die.
Yeah, that's right. Let me ask you, what exposure, if any, have you had any exposure with the brain implants and this type of stuff? Has that come across your desk? I know your main thing is cybersecurity. Have you come across any of that stuff?
I have, and I'm thinking we might want to save that one for another show because I don't want to start saying things that, I have.
Oh, okay. All right. But we'll say that.
Now we're really talking Dr. Fauci and our favorite Martian antennas. Yeah. But this stuff that they are proposing, man, people simply need to say no.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way to stop it. Just simply, like Nancy Reagan said, just say no.
That's right. Yeah. You know, one of the things when I look at this that I think about in terms of their ability to control, I remember the Navy Yard shooting a few years ago, and there was a guy, and he wrote on the stock of his gun, "This is my ELF weapon." He wasn't playing Gauntlet. extremely low frequency is probably what he was talking about, because the Navy does have a lot of use with extremely low frequency. That's how they communicate with submarines worldwide. Extremely low frequency. And if you go back to Mind Wars of what's the guy's name? Michael Aquino, who dressed up like a warlock and went on Oprah Winfrey, but he was an NSA official, and he wrote a book called Mind Wars. In that, he was talking about ELF, extremely low frequency, and its ability to manipulate people's moods directly. But, you know, in addition to it being able to manipulate us directly biologically, if you had something that was going to respond to ELF, they could, if they did some kind of an ELF implant on you, basically they could get to you anywhere on Earth, because they can get to these submarines anywhere under the sea on Earth, right? And they could send a signal to whatever devices they'd implanted on you. I mean, it was just, when you look at what these people are capable of doing, the technology has been there, and the ELF stuff to communicate with submarines has been there since the middle of the 20th century. And that's the thing that I try to get across to people. The danger here is to misunderestimate, as George Bush would say. I've said that so many times, it's now become a word. Is to underestimate the evil that's in the heart of these people, and to underestimate the technology that is in their control. Those are the two things that are so dangerous to us. We don't think that they've got that kind of technology, and we don't think, because we're normal, that anybody would do the types of things that they want to do, that they're planning to do.
Well, yeah, you could take the Cuban embassy, for instance. How do you think they got to them?
Yeah.
But if you're willing to let a whole island of people die from a volcanic eruption, that answers all your questions right there. I mean, if you think about it, these people are at that level. Do you remember when Trump was running around saying that they had hacked this microwave and was listening in?
I don't remember.
Do you remember asking him that?
I don't remember that.
Well, you asked me that question and you threw me for a loop. I'm like, well, I guess theoretically it's possible.
Oh, yeah.
So I started digging, and sure enough, there is a patent that has been filed to hack microwave ovens to listen in to.
Wow.
And this goes back to your ELF, your ELFs. This stuff can be weaponized. And if you get it implanted, oh, man, they can make every day like a day at Disneyland if they choose to.
Yes.
I mean, you're going to have a disconnect from your reality to whatever's being sent to you. Now, that's a spooky thought. My reality's scary enough. I don't need any help with it.
You know, talking about appliances, I remember when Petraeus was head of the CIA, and he was saying, we're going to get into the Internet of Things, and we're going to let, you know, your toaster oven will be something that we use to listen to you. And even though it was Petraeus, and even though he was director of the CIA, and even though he's bragging about this like a supervillain, when we talked about it, everybody said, you're a bunch of conspiracy theorists. They can't do that. And again, it's going back to not understanding how evil these people are, and not understanding the technology that they have available to them. One of the ways that this is going to roll out, I think, in the near term, I was looking at a video about the measures that Disneyland in California is going to take to reopen. And one of the things that they were very, very proud of and showing on the mainstream media news broadcast was that before anybody got into their park, they're going to put you in a room. And then they're going to do thermal scanning on everybody that's all compressed in that room. And it showed the monitor, it put a number on your forehead as to what your temperature was, so the people who are monitoring it can go in and pull you out if your temperature's too high. And then they started talking about how they were going to change the park experience, because, you know, it's just not, physical reality is just not enough for us anymore. We've got to have some kind of an augmented reality. And so what they're going to do is they're going to overlay an augmented reality over the park, they said, so that your experience there will be different every time that you go, and you'll be able to pick what kind of an overlaid reality you want. I don't know, maybe it's going to be, you're going to have stormtroopers popping out everywhere, or maybe you'll have a T-Rex or velociraptors chasing you around the park. Whatever it is, they're going to augment it with reality. And that's the type of stuff that will be used as a gateway to get people, that kind of gamification of reality will be used to get people to eagerly put these chips into their bodies.
That's right. I mean, you skip all this sitting in a room stuff. If you've got your dog chip, just wave it and go on in. You're set. Go have your virtual experience.
That's right.
So you can bypass sitting all this and sitting in this room and having them take your temperature and stuff. Just wave your chip and off you go.
Yeah.
It's I know you wanted to go off into the deep net, the dark net. And the thing is, and this is the whole thing with technology, is this stuff can be used for good or it can be used for evil.
That's right. It's like a gun.
You could take these, yes, you could take these chips and solve the problems of the universe with them. Somebody will. You could cure cancer. You could cure Alzheimer's. You could cure any number of things. That's the good, which I think there's a place for it. But what we're talking about is the trajectory they've got it on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always good versus evil.
Right.
It's just that's how technology works.
And as everybody is concerned, and rightfully so, about government having a monopoly on guns, because we all know, as Mao said, power comes out of the barrel of a gun. If the government has all the guns, the government has all the power. The problem is, and this is what Eisenhower warned us about with the military academic industrial complex, and that is that they would take over all research and that they would use it for evil, that they would have a full monopoly on technology. And when we look at where technology is going, every time somebody comes up with a technological breakthrough, these people at DARPA and the Pentagon, these military industrial complex, they always turn it to evil and they weaponize whatever it is. They turn it into a weapon. This is why you don't believe these projects that are coming from DARPA. It's why I don't believe the self-driving car thing. I mean, that was their first project that they did in terms of a competition was self-driving vehicles. That is a weaponized approach to attack our transportation and to control our movement. That's ultimately what this is about. It's all strategic. I mean, even our interstate system was initially built really for the military. They just let us use it in the interim. That's what Eisenhower was doing with it. But when we look at the way these people want to take over our infrastructure, physical and cyber infrastructure, that is the thing that is really concerning. And it looks like with this cyber polygon that they are, and there's almost an imminency about this that concerns people, the way that Davos is pushing this. They may not wait, I don't think they will wait, to practice this thing for 20 years before they unleash their cyber pandemic on us. What do you think?
If you want my opinion, I think it's going to happen before the elections of 2024
mm-hmm.
or 2022.
Mm-hmm. One of the two. Oh, 2022.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll wait and see if it comes to pass. I hope someone hears this and they're suddenly like, oh, crap, we're busted, and they pivot off of it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find another little dirty deed to run on the people. And, you know, you're talking about the scam. This is all being done against the people that are paying the taxes that make this happen.
Yes, paying for our own destruction.
Yeah, and it's like people wake up. You know, this woke society, I want to see them try to dox me. I want to see them try to silence me mm-hmm. because bad things are going to happen to people. They may be fleeing their house from a flaming server fire. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm the last person they want to dox. But I'm reading about that, and all it is the open source intelligence that they're gleaning off of social media.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this type of stuff, I've seen last night a report where they're rioting, BLM's rioting. They are trying to dox cops. They're trying to dox the cops' families. Now, I have no love for the cops, don't get me wrong. But their first stop they're going to is Facebook. Second stop is Twitter. And they're trying to build profiles. Of course, everybody has family pictures up and mm-hmm. their lovely house where they live, and suddenly these cops are now at risk.
Yeah, right.
So you have like two scorpions in a bottle with this technology. They have lost control of it, and yet they keep wanting to advance it.
Mm-hmm.
So the victims they try to create, they turn into the victims of their own devices. And it's like, people, stop. Slow this down. Let's think about what we're doing. Let's set some parameters. But no, everybody rushes to be a lab rat. Let's get jabbed.
That's right.
Oh, it's cool to get this implant. Well, you don't know what's in that implant. No, but I'm cool. I have something no one else does.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, going back to, I know we're getting close to time, but you just think about Barnaby Jack. He was showing how to
yes.
hack these medical device implants.
Yes.
These dog chips are a lot easier.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and just review for everybody, Barnaby Jack was a cybersecurity expert, and what happened before his, what was he about to do before his untimely death? Tell everybody the story of Barnaby Jack.
He was going to display... how he made his claim to fame was he taught people how to jackpot ATM machines. You know, you could walk up to an ATM machine with his methods, push certain codes into it, and it would just spit money out. It keep spitting money out till it was empty. So his next exploit, well, they still do, but don't tell anyone. His next exploit was he was going to show that these medical implants were so easily hacked. They're RFID, just like the dog chips. So I think it was 2013, the night before he was going to do these displays at the Black Hat Conference in Las Vegas, he died of a drug overdose. They had him off. So, I mean, he had all kinds of pills, gave him all kinds of thrills, and he died. I can tell you right now, I knew Barnaby, just like I know you, David. Barnaby took as many illegal drugs as you do. I've said that before, but
mm-hmm.
it's the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he never got the opportunity to make that display.
Mm.
And Big Pharma, as far as I know, they're still doing what they do because they don't care about your security.
That's right. Yeah, the Black Hat Conference, that happens. I think it overlaps a little bit with the DEF CON conference. They used to do that in Las Vegas on an annual basis. I guess they didn't do it last year. But we've seen all kinds of stuff come out of there. They've demonstrated how vulnerable the voting machines are, how vulnerable the state boards of elections are to hacking. And so they do that as part of the Black Hat Conference. They show how to take over cars. All these different things are shown at the Black Hat Conference. The DEF CON thing is really kind of the establishment government conference, right?
Yeah, and yeah. You know, one of these years, I'm thinking this year, you and I ought to go out there, and you can just film till you get happy. Just don't put me on camera. We'll sit in the scariest room in the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I always wanted to go. Always wanted to go. Never got there, but yeah, there's certain things like that that every year they have some very interesting things that they do. Voter Village, where they had a bunch of kids hacking state boards of elections. This is why you want to talk about being a Luddite. I'm about human observation of paper ballots on one day. Give people the purple thing on their thumb like they did for the elections in Iraq. I mean, go low tech, go simple if you want to go honest. But they don't want an honest election. Not at all.
No. They... once again, it's good versus evil. And,
yeah.
You know, you look at the people that are in politics, this is not our best and brightest.
Yeah.
And,
they are crookedest though.
Right? No, yeah. And we keep re-voting them in. I mean, how stupid are we? And I'm not talking about political party.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about, look at the people that represent us.
Yeah.
How stupid are we?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
This is the best we can do.
Well, they do a couple of things. Number one, they control access to the ballot. They make sure that only the two parties have access to the ballot. Then within the party, they vet who's going to run. And then they have all kinds of hooks into these people. I mean, you have people you know, that are already pre-selected because they're already blackmailable. They got a long history with this. So that's where this whole thing is. And then, of course, they count the votes as well. So they've got this thing sewn up. This is why I say You need to understand and watch carefully what these politicians are doing, in the same way that you would watch carefully a gang of organized criminals operating in your neighborhood. But don't expect that you're going to get that gang of organized criminals to do anything that's good, or you're going to be able to reform them. Just make sure you watch them and know where they are. Well, we're out of time, but thank you so much for joining us, GoTree. It's always fascinating to talk to you. And we'll get you back on to talk about this, I forget what it was called. It's a
the dark net or the
deep dot web. Deep dot web and the dark web.
Whatever phrase they're using today.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk about that. We'll get you back on to talk about that, because that is very important. And that it's not sinister, as you pointed out. It's dark because they can't see what's going on there, which it may be our fallback. I think it will be our fallback position as they continue to expand this control of all information. As we pointed out, they kicked us off yesterday off of YouTube for the seventh time. but, you know, it's gotten to the point now where they are so quick and so thorough in terms of combing your content for anything that's relevant to their central criminal schemes, that there really isn't any point of being on YouTube. I mean, you get some access to the audiences, but I'm going to have to rethink how I approach this, because there isn't any way that you're going to be able to get any kind of real information through that censorship now they've got running there. But
Do a Google search and see what you get in return. It's not going to be what you're looking for.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Search engine designed to hide stuff and to misinform you. That's exactly what it is. Thank you so much for joining us, GoTree, and thank you to all of you for joining us. That's it for our broadcast today. By the way, I know Google doesn't want you to find me, so this is where you can find me. You can find me at thedavidknightshow.com. You can find me on Subscribestar at The David Knight Show, and you can subscribe on a monthly basis as well as send individual contributions, and you can send contributions via PayPal to the email address, or tips or comments to davidknightshow@protonmail.com. Many other ways that you can connect with us, and, of course, where you can find us on live stream, as well as podcast and on video channels. We have 4 video channels outside of YouTube, all that. And here's the information on where you can find us. Thank you for watching.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country, as well as our family.